I gotta hand it to you, Clarence.
I was cool.
Man, you were cooler than cool.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 77 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And we've got a whole festival of fun for you on the show this time round. Our main review is Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. From this point forward, I shall only refer to it as Valerian because the full title is long and pointless, much like the film. Oops.
Spoilers.
Sorry.
Oh,
I didn't mean to say that. Sorry.
For our real thoughts.
Our top three this time around is our top three over-the-top performances. I want it all to be about that person right in the middle going, me, 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 me.
Oh.
Wow.
That was quite good.
Thank you. I'm not going to lie, I kind of warmed up on the way up here.
We're also going to be re-watching the true classic from the 90s, True Romance.
Yeah. Which I haven't seen in so long.
I'm excited for this one, I'm not going to lie. I know we've got a main review that probably isn't going to be great, let's just say it. So hopefully we've got something to back it up and, you know, make it a good episode.
Yeah. We've also got the second round of our incredibly popular game, Scory Feldman.
Oh, yes.
And I am the quiz master this time round. I won the previous round, so it's Gemma versus Mark. And let me think about this. So who'd be in the third round? It'd be me and Mark, wouldn't it?
It would be.
Right, so I want Gemma to win today.
Yeah!
As the games master, that's really nice to hear. You know, thanks, mate.
It's all right. No, you will get to pick who goes first, so there will be no shenanigans. It will be completely fair and impartial, I assure you.
I smell a screw job already. Honestly, I already do. I can see it in his eye.
Our movie masturbate this time around is the one and the only Sir Anthony Hopkins of the United Kingdom of Earthshire.
Wow. That's actually his official title. If
you
look on his passport or anything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, he's got stamps all over the planet.
Lovely.
If you ever got knighted or made into a dame, Gemma, for example, would you insist that people gave you that full title at all times?
I would.
Yeah, I would. If I was Sir Ben, I would insist on that in any scenario. Like even in Starbucks. I've got a coffee for Ben. Sir Ben.
Yeah. Can't be for me. It's for you, mate.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, cluck the medals, mate.
Massively. Also talking about massively, we're going to have a massive big giveaway on this episode, a huge one. Normally we have a couple of good prizes and a bit of shit. This time,
none of the prizes are shit. They're all gold.
They're not as good as those.
We've just given away like Krampus packages.
On this one, we've got some unreal, seriously huge, unreal prizes. Just stick around for it because it's massive.
And we've also got all the usual stuff you're used to, listener questions, our pop culture recommendations of the week, all the standard bonanza of goodies we give you on the Skip to the End podcast. But this isn't a standard episode of the Skip to the End podcast. It's also a pretty bloody massive celebration for a couple of reasons. The first reason is, it's our 3-year anniversary.
Ayo!
I wish we had some party poppers and
Me
stuff
too.
Around those things. 3 years, guy.
Not guys.
Yeah. Ben, me and you, mate.
I know. So it was 3 years ago that me and you and our former host, co-host Adam, came up with this whole concept. And I didn't think it'd last one show. I certainly didn't think it'd last 3 bloody years and 77 shows plus specials.
Amazing. Absolutely mental. It is fair to say. No, it is actually mental.
It is mental.
3 years. Wow. It's and one crazy. Year, I believe, for Poochie.
Well, that's the other reason why we're celebrating.
it's
Gemma's 1-year anniversary since joining the podcast. So well done, Gemma.
That's my party poppers.
And you know what that means, don't you? It means you've only got one more year of probation before you become a fully-fledged member of the podcast. So, you know, keep working hard and we'll see what happens.
Why are you laughing right now?
Because I know it's true. Yeah. This is actual fear.
I have also got one other announcement to make to you both. This is pretty special.
Yeah.
As this episode is being listened to right now, we've just hit 5 million plays and downloads of the overall podcast, which
really?
Is insane.
5 million.
So it's a triple celebration.
Wow.
That's crazy. And again, going back to when we first started this, I remember after one episode, we were saying to each other, Mark, wouldn't it be amazing if we could get 1,000 plays?
I was saying 100 at that point. Yeah. I was, honestly. 100 in a year was the target.
And now we're at 5 million in 3 years.
Me and you. Yeah. I reckon 4.5 million between us. That's good going, isn't it, mate? Gemma's done all right as well. You've contributed over the last 12 months.
Yeah.
The numbers have gone up since you've joined, so you can have a bit of credit.
Coincidence, but
seasonal trends.
I'm happy now. This is a great start to the episode, and so much celebration.
It is, and because we've been having so many plays, we've been tacking on new listeners with each episode. Again, just to give you the social media details, if you don't follow us already, on Twitter at STTE Podcast and facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast. One new listener we've had recently is a chap called Ben Feldman, and I know you guys will have seen him tweet us a few times. This is a guy who had the podcast recommended to him from another friend of his, and he has since listened to, I think it's 30 episodes in 2 weeks.
Yep.
Oh my goodness.
Is that right?
Mental. Absolutely insane.
Yeah, that's an overdose. I couldn't listen to that much of us.
I liked it because what he was doing is he was listening to the episode and then putting his topic choices through. So I'd just be randomly going on then, be like, oh, I forgot we did that in episode 68 and all this. But that guy needs a reward. I don't know what we'll give him, but a t-shirt or something one day.
Well, he's had a shout out. I think that's good enough. Yeah.
We'll think of something.
But thank you, Ben. I hope you stick with it. I hope you're not sick of our voices, because I bloody would be. So stick with it, please.
I wonder if he's related to Corey Feldman.
He could be. I think he's Corey Feldman's little brother.
Wow. Yeah.
Holy hell.
I'm ready to get on this episode. I'm absolutely buzzing.
Yeah,
let's do this.
Let's get started.
Our top three topic this time around is the top three over-the-top performances. We're going to be paying tribute to those who just want to be like a Tupac Shakur classic 90s album, All Eyes on Me.
Oh, I like what you did there.
See? Synergy. So basically, yeah, I want the scenery chewers. And we do talk about it a lot in the previous episodes. And I'm super, super excited about seeing what you guys have come up with. So I'm going to throw this over to... Oh, it's got to be Ben. Come on, Ben. Give me your first choice.
I was sitting there thinking she's going to change it up today. Twat.
I am.
I was getting really ready then. Like, oh, it's my time.
It's our anniversary. You can't call her a twat.
You can the next episode, though.
I wouldn't mean that at all. You know, you're a great person. That I wouldn't want that to come across in an offensive way to anyone.
Enough of this shit. Let's get into it. My first pick, of course, it's Nicolas Cage in The Wicker Man. Not the bees!
How did it get burned?
It is one of the most batshit insane performances in an utterly batshit insane film. But that's kind of the point, because I don't think Cage could possibly have played this any other way, because the script is so fucking stupid that the only way to play it is over the top. I mean, how else could you possibly play a line that goes, "Killing me won't bring back your goddamn honey"? The only way to deliver that line is fucking balls to the wall, crazy. Yeah. How else can you do that? But it's an utterly hilarious performance. It's just Nicolas Cage randomly punching and drop kicking women in the face. Why is he doing that?
For a whole hour and a half. Not even just one scene. It goes on and more faces get the... Basically, the full force of him, which is brilliant.
Female faces, for that matter.
And then, of course, there's a bit when he's in the bear suit. He's just wandering around a field with a big bear suit on.
He clubs someone with a paw. She goes down like a ton of bricks.
Oh, God, it's so stupid. But he does the right thing. This film was obviously critically panned when it came out because it was a complete and utter disaster piece. But Cage has gone on record since and says, "I don't know why people say this is unintentionally funny." He claims that he and the writer-director, Neil LaBute, purposefully made this as a black comedy, but that's bullshit.
No, that's bullshit.
He's saying that now. It's convenient to say that now, but it's absolutely not true.
He's like Tommy Wiseau at The Room. He now says it's meant to be laughed at. Mm, no, you're fucking talking shit.
He was hoping for a BAFTA at least.
Amazing. If we hadn't had, I think, a Nicolas Cage choice, I think I wouldn't have known you actually at all. Mm-hmm. And that's a hell of a good one. Even when you saw on social media, we will come to it, but so many people were posting the gif of him with his head inside that cage.
Yeah.
So good. He should have got an Oscar, though.
He should.
He was robbed. I'm sorry, but he deserves it just for however much he got paid. Was it some divorce or is it some... There's something that he needs money for.
Extension to the conservatory.
Yeah, you don't do that.
Yeah.
Massively.
Poor guy.
Come on, Mark. What's your first choice?
Four words for you. Willy Wonka, Johnny Wanker. This remake of a really good film. I like the original Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and Gene Wilder does it well.
Yes.
That is how you do it. It's
absolutely
not too over the top, but it's a bit quirky and it's very original, and you do warm to him. You are very intrigued by him the moment he comes out of his walking stick and does that role. why did kind of Johnny Depp not try and adapt any of that? Because it worked so well. He just went, I'm going to be way over the top. I'm going to be Jack Sparrow, but in a chocolate factory, but take it up a whole other level.
Yeah.
I'm going to be annoying from the moment I come on screen. You're not actually going to come to my chocolate factory because you'll probably end up trying to get fiddled with. That's the sort of look I got from him. He is definitely a bit too over-friendly with the kids.
Yeah.
And not in a nice way, like, oh, you'll get an extra chocolate bar. You'll end up getting an extra hickey or something off him.
Hickey.
Hickey.
Good Lord.
He is horrendous in that film.
It's awful. He's playing it essentially as Michael Jackson.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that Michael Jackson definitely touched kids, but there's a hint of that in there.
But yeah, I just hate the film. I don't know what Danny Elfman was doing getting involved in this. I don't know what Tim Burton was doing getting involved in this. I just think it's an absolute shambles. Why remake a film that was good anyway? I know we have to cash in and do it, but it didn't work. And casting him was always going to happen because it's Johnny Depp. And he has to go and work with Tim Burton. They just have to nowadays. They ruined it. They ruined the whole thing. And he's way over the top. He's kind of so over the top that I just turn it off.
It always displays a bit of hubris to me when a director or a writer decides they want to remake something that's already good. If you want to remake something that was shit in the first place, fine. You've not got much of a bar to get over. But if you're saying, oh, this film that's a classic that people love, I can do it better. Well, then you're an arrogant prick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to go up against Gene Wilder. Gene Wilder nailed it. Like, he, you know, we miss him every day. But we don't miss him every day. We miss him quite a lot.
Every morning when I wake up over my cornflakes, I'm thinking, Gene Wilder, man.
Come back.
Come back. We miss you. We need you more than ever.
But he just did it so well. And that's one of his iconic performances I'll always go back to. And I always remember him as being, you are Willy Wonka, not Johnny Wanker. So I'm sorry. He's a tosser. I don't like the way he's turned out. I hate the way he's being now, doing any old shit. And everyone says, oh, it's his comeback film, his next one. I have no faith anymore. He's dead to me.
There's no comeback. There's no comeback from death.
Yeah.
So, ask Gene Wilder.
There you go. He'll never come on Mark and Me now or skip the end. So it's your topic. I want to hear what you've got.
Of course, I'm going to go Nicolas Cage. Yes. I'm going to go for Vampire's Kiss.
Yes.
I'm a vampire. And of course, me and Mark talked about this film a good few episodes ago when he came out of the hat on Movie Masturbate. But my God, he's like a dog chewing on a tasty treat with this film. It's just as if Cage has gone to 11 from the Spinal Tap volume knob, but he just appears unhinged about getting jiggy with a girl in a nightclub who happens to be a vampire of all things. But my God, the slow realisation that he realises that he is a vampire by putting on Poundland vampire teeth to sort of wide-eyed Nosferatu-esque realness through a nightclub trying to find a victim, to the whole thing about trash in his whole room. It is completely off the wall. It is insane. This guy must have had some kind of day release when he was doing the scenes for this film, because it is just so terrifying, but you can't stop watching it. It's fascinating. It's why I absolutely love this film, and I do hold a very special place in my heart for Nicolas Cage.
See, I still haven't seen this film,
please.
But I've seen so many screen grabs of it, of him with the fake plastic teeth in and him just mugging at the camera, that I feel as though I've seen everything I need to see.
Yeah, oh, it's that for an hour and a half, so you've seen the best bits.
And I've never known anybody to beautifully recite the alphabet in the way that he does. Do you remember when he's talking about how to file properly? He's going A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, and he just...
The Coke's kicking in.
Oh, yeah, allegedly.
Yeah.
So it had to be this for me. Had to be.
I'm glad we've already had two Nicolas Cages and it's round one.
Come on, Ben.
I think if you were to ask the normal man on the street who watches films who the biggest overactor in film is, they'd say Nicolas Cage. And I think if you were to ask them who comes a close second, I'd say it's this guy. So I've gone with Gary Oldman in The Fifth Element.
Amazing. Such a good choice.
Yes.
He plays Zorg, and Zorg is one of my all-time favourite movie villains. He's this sociopathic, limping dandy with an inexplicable Texan accent. I don't know why he's from Texas in the middle of space. Although one good thing I would say about Oldman is that he always uses a different accent. So we're going to talk about True Romance later, and in that he plays an American Drexel, but he puts on like a fake, he's a white guy who thinks he's black basically, and he puts on a fake kind of urban accent. I like the fact that he puts in the effort to try these different accents each film, but some of them just seem utterly random and completely pointless. So why this space dandy is Texan, I don't know, but it kind of works, and he's just so wildly over the top. And another interesting thing about Oldman is, for all that he's done so many of these wild over-the-top roles, he can be a tremendously subtle, award-winning actor. He just often chooses not to be. Which I kind of dig that. I like the fact that he thinks, ah, fuck it, I'm just going to have fun this time round. He absolutely despises this film, though. He's been interviewed and asked, what do you think of your performance in this film? And he says, I hate it. The only reason why he did it is because he was good friends with Luc Besson. Obviously, we know they did Leon together. And Luc Besson had offered to fund Gary Oldman's film Nil by Mouth. So basically repaying the favour to his mate, he was like, oh, fine, I'll do Fifth Element. And I don't even think he read the script. He turned up, did it, went home, and he hates it, but I fucking love it.
I didn't know that. That's a nice debt to pay off, but if you're going to regret it for the rest of your life, was it really worth it? Nil by mouth, was it worth it? Probably not. He's come through loads on social media, and a lot of people are like, no, you can't say that. You're giving him a hard time. No, he is one of the biggest over-the-top performances in most of his roles, but this one specifically is literally enjoyable, which is good.
Yeah, oh, it's great.
But my
God,
he just goes with it. And fair play to him.
Yeah.
I like the fact that he does what the hell he wants.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and OTT done right.
Yes, which not many people get right.
Because that's the key, you know. Just because we say it's an over-the-top performance, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a negative.
No.
My third choice, which we'll come to in a bit, I would say is a brilliant, amazing performance that is wildly over-the-top. It can be a positive.
Because it needs to be sometimes.
Yeah.
Definitely, but it's also fun to knock them down.
Big time. Are you ready for my second one?
Let's do this.
It's Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker. Now, you're probably thinking, he's not that bad. I'm talking Spider-Man 3.
Of course you are.
My God.
Emo Peter.
What is he doing? Because in the first two films, he's all right, he's bearable. And the second Spider-Man film with Dr. Ock is a great film. It's one of my favourite Marvel films, and it is brilliant. For some reason, why didn't he just stick with that and then go, oh, actually, I'm going to dye my hair black, have the emo fringe, and be ridiculously annoying, and nothing like the same Peter Parker we got for two films. So what are you doing? Why are you suddenly doing this? Why, when you go and deliver pizza, are you dancing in the street like La La Land? Why, when you're actually waiting for your pizzas to be cooked, are you in the restaurant doing some dance routine and up on the chairs and stuff? You're being an absolute idiot.
Yeah.
And we've never seen that side of confident over the top. We normally see the Peter Parker who's living at home with his nan and his aunt and just chilling and just being a bit more reserved. Why suddenly in two films do we have to then see this ridiculous, and I want to turn it off. And the film's shit anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the one thing I will say in defence of the character, it's because he's under the influence of the Venom symbiote, isn't he? So that's why he's acting differently.
That's okay.
He's not just deciding to be different. Yeah. So that's why. But you're right, the film is shit. Venom is so badly misused. I mean, Tobey fucking Maguire under the Venom influence is one thing, but old guy from That 70s Show is the other one.
Oh, Topher Grace.
Topher Grace. You're having a giraffe, aren't you? And I know, Mark, you think that The Sandman is the greatest comic book villain in history, but he really isn't. It's just a terrible film all ends up.
Yeah, and he could have got the moment to shine because the villains and the baddies are so bad, apart from Sandman, greatest villain ever in the history of all villains. But yeah, I just don't know why it went so wrong. Yeah, you're saying the Venom's the reason, but it's still a shit performance. It isn't convincing that he's been taken over.
Yeah, it isn't.
It's just lame.
I'm amazed you can last the entire film. I can't last through it at all. It is awful. It's to quote Mark, it's dog shit.
Yep.
It is.
Shame.
Oh dear.
But like Ben said, we're not always going to be negative. There's sometimes a good over-the-top performance.
But mainly negative.
So what's your second choice?
Oh, speaking about a love-hate relationship, mine is a film that we talked about not too long ago. So it's Faye Dunaway in Mommy Dearest.
Yeah.
Oh. So the camp classic that is this film. But my God, she just shrieks the entire duration of the whole film. You think I'm loud? Forget about it. This sister rocks it. But it's as if she's possessed by this spirit of Joan Crawford, but it's done in the most terrible way possible that I absolutely adore it. She's got this air of regalness about her, and she thinks that she probably thought by doing this role it probably would have got her an Oscar or a load of high prestigious awards, but it ended up getting her a prestigious Razzie for Worst Actress at that time. But it was always going to be incredibly difficult to play Joan Crawford straight, I think, because she was renowned to be absolutely batshit crazy and bonkers to anything in this whole world, especially with her feud with Bette Davis back in the day. But she really went hell for leather. My God. She tried to knock it out of the park, but I think it bounced off the wall and hit her in the face. But over-exaggerate. You think about, you know, Nick Cage obviously being this wild man.
Yeah.
This is the female equivalent of Nick Cage. This is the most over-the-top performance I could think of for a lady.
So you bring up a good point there, because you say that she was perhaps going over the top to try and garner an Oscar.
Mm.
And it's funny that, isn't it? Because people go over the top for different reasons. Like, Nicolas Cage isn't doing this for the Oscars. He just doesn't know how to go into a different gear. That's just the only gear he has now. He's just a wild man. But she was doing it because she's thinking, oh, if I'm a shrieking harpy, oh, the Oscar committee will be all over me. But it just didn't work.
Yeah, I mean, you see some of her other roles, like Bonnie and Clyde at Chinatown. She's amazing. But this film...
I've never seen it.
I haven't seen it.
I'm not
going to. I've seen enough clips.
I will see this. I'll take one for the team, but I, of course, also love it. So it's a massive conflict of interest for myself.
You're not selling it to me. I just can't now. You've just told me pretty much what happens and how annoying she is.
And we can watch another film instead. So
yeah,
you're welcome.
That's fair enough. Is it really the last time round?
It is.
No.
It is. And going back to what I said earlier, over-the-top performances that can be great, and this one, I believe, is one of the very best, and it's Michael Keaton in Beetlejuice.
Oh! Forgot about him.
Yeah, he's not an actor you could ever really accuse of subtlety. He tends to be somewhat over-the-top in everything he does. And this is a broad slapstick performance, which is entirely fitting for the character of Beetlejuice, because he is a complete and utter lunatic. The interesting thing to me is, when we think of the film Beetlejuice, we think of the title character, of course. Do you know he's only in 17 minutes of the film?
Jesus.
Yeah. He doesn't show up until like half an hour in, and he's only in 17 and a half minutes tops.
Bloody hell, he's so iconic.
Yeah, he's so iconic, and because he's so big and so broad, he dominates the film. And you just don't realise that he's barely in the damn thing.
I did forget, yeah, because when we did it as a rewatch, it's half an hour, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't even see him.
Yeah.
But perfectly used.
But then when we get him, oh my lord.
The introduction scene to him, which you can find in its entirety on YouTube, when the couple who've just moved into the house meet him in the graveyard in the toy village thing, it's just a wild over-the-top scene. You're getting this full, undiluted version of the character straight into your veins. And some of the lines that are in it, apparently he ad-libbed. A lot of it was scripted, but a lot of it is just Michael Keaton being this brilliant comic actor that he is, ad-libbing a load of these lines. The interesting thing to me is, he was cast as Batman 1 year later.
Oh my God.
I understand completely, when you think of that timescale, why people were so against it. What in that performance would ever make you think, oh yeah, that's Bruce Wayne? It wouldn't, would it?
Not at all. Complete opposite in every way.
And he was fantastic as Batman, so Burton's decision was justified, but it did seem really out of left field.
Isn't it weird that we're talking about when Burton used to make good decisions? It does seem so long ago.
It was long ago.
Yeah.
We don't get that anymore.
What I like, though, is we are giving it praise, and that performance, when we did the rewatch, I fell in love with it so much, and it just doesn't feel dated.
No.
It's a weird one. Even though it is that time and the other films that time that came out, you will look at, God, this is so 90s and that. This film is a classic.
Mm-hmm.
And we are still getting the second one, I believe.
They've been talking about the sequel for some time. I don't think all the parties have come together yet. And I think it's a difficult one for Keaton, because on one hand, he says that this is his favourite ever performance, unsurprisingly. So I can understand why you'd want to go back and revisit it. But on the other hand, do you want to risk ruining it?
And he's
by doing an inferior version.
And he's on such a roll at the moment with some of the roles he's coming up with. One of the best Marvel villains that we've seen.
Oh, fantastic.
And you know Johnny Depp will be involved. So at the end of the day, does he want to, you know, probably...
Nah.
But I bet he'd be cast as his villain against him. Oh, I can see it now already. And is it Helen Bonner?
Helen Bonner Carter.
No, Burton's got rid of her now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Kicked her to the curb.
Oh, dear.
She's yesterday's news.
Oh, that's a shame. Oh my God, this one's bad. Are you ready for this one?
Always.
Really bad. Arnold Schwarzenegger is Mr. Freeze.
Chill out.
I see you.
What a shite film Batman and Robin is. And he doesn't add anything to it to even give it any more respect. Good actor. He's done Commando. He's done Terminator. Terminator 2 by this point. Really, really respectful actor. Why put him as the villain in this stupid, over-the-top, really, really just... bad superhero film? You can't take anything good from it. They're all terrible. All, you know, even when you get like Jim Carrey terrible, you get all these what's the girl from Kill Bill?
Uma Thurman.
Yeah,
Poison Ivy.
Terrible. It just goes downhill. All these Batman films that come after Batman Returns are dog shit. But this guy, he doesn't even walk right. And it's because he's a musty bastard, like wrestlers. He just has to walk ridiculously over the top. Every movement of his arm, every line he delivers. I know it's not his fault, but the puns and everything. He's so over the top that it's just like, you were, for me, the guy from Commando. You are, you know, Arnie, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You don't need the money at this point. You're not a cokehead. Why are you doing this shit? And the way he delivers those lines is embarrassing. I know he's got the accent and all this, but even, you know, like straight away both of you went, ice to meet you and stuff like this.
Yeah.
Freeze. It's shit, isn't it? It is utterly shit.
I'm just sitting there thinking about bits and how fucking terrible it is. Like bat nipples, for Christ's sake.
But the costumes look terrible.
Yeah.
Remember Bean? Bean. Remember Mr. Bean in it?
Bane. Bean Man.
Bane as well, with his green wires.
Oh my God,
and just...
he was terrible.
Wasn't it Vader from WWE?
No.
Oh.
Just another fat man.
Embarrassing. Really bad. And he must look back and think, what was I doing?
I bet he does, but then I bet he looks at his old like check stubs and goes, oh no, actually it was worth it in the end. Because they must have just driven a truck of money up to his house.
That was my first ever rewatch when I did my first ever episode here.
Oh, wow. Shit, it's like I chose this on purpose for you to mention
it's
that.
It's like the circle of life.
I love it.
Brilliant.
I don't want to give it any more time, so move on.
Okay, well, what Ben said about when you love an over-the-top performance where it's actually... it's a really great performance at the same time. So the last pick of this topic is Mr. Alan Rickman from Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Very good.
Gone, but certainly not forgotten.
Oh, yeah, you can't even say it. Gone, but not forgotten. Do you wake up every day and miss him as well?
I do.
I always think about him every day.
Miss him in my cornflakes. Mm. But he plays the Sheriff George of Nottingham, and he plays this akin to a pantomime villain. He walks into the room expecting thousands of kids in a theatre to start booing and hissing him. And if he had a twiddly moustache, you know he would be twiddling that to the nth degree, or at least until it was up to one strand. When you're going to be delivering lines like, "Loxley, I'm going to cut your heart out with a spoon." Now, firstly, bit of physics there. How are you going to cut a heart out with a spoon? There's no serration on the spoon. But
spoons don't cut. That's why we've got knives.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's easy, isn't it?
And you only throw spoons at images of spoons on a screen aka the room.
Yes, that's actually why they were invented.
Mm-hmm. But he overplays every little facial expression with just such panache and such... He's clearly having a bit of a giggle when he's doing this. Like Gary Oldman, you know, he's really going balls to the wall. But at the same time, it's okay because he's having so much fun. And he ad-libbed the line that he's most known for about, you know, "Cancel the scraps for the lepers and call off Christmas," you know, to make him a real nasty bastard. But it's the OTT performance that I adore so, so much. And yeah, I mean, Rickman. Rickman.
I love that man.
Yeah, Rickman was awesome. I must admit, though, I don't really remember this performance. The only thing I remember about that film is Robin Hood, a character who is from Nottingham, having a fucking American accent. What was that about?
Yeah, the only thing I remember from that film is Wet, Wet, Wet being at number one for about 10
years.
it was Bryan Adams.
Oh, okay.
Wet was.
Oh, they was that did, the bodyguard?
That was Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Oh.
Basically,
shit, isn't it?
Basically shit music.
But Bryan Adams was number one for about 11 years.
Yeah,
there
he
we
was.
Go.
Shame.
See, I remember how much I remember that film. I get the wrong soundtrack.
Yeah. Shall we hear from social media?
Yes.
Yeah. Retro Cinema at the Retro Cinema said Schwarzenegger in Batman and Robin, Dennis Hopper in Blue Velvet.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm,
and Gary Oldman in The Fifth Element. So mm-hmm. Agrees
good
with you guys.
Choices.
Yeah. Midlands Movies at Midlands Movies said Nick Cage in Snake Eyes. Forget about that
like
performance.
That
Al Pacino in Devil's Advocate and Kevin Bacon in Hollow Man.
Yes, I don't think any of us ever seen that. Like, I don't think anyone's seen that film, but what I've read, it's way over the top.
James Gain at James Gain says Alan Rickman, Robin Hood, Gary Oldman in The Fifth Element, and Russell Crowe, the man with the iron fists.
Yes, he does. He does overact in that, but it's a brilliant performance and a really fun film.
I really need to see that.
Yeah. Me too. Kyle at Gordon Don said Gary Oldman for Leon.
Oh, yeah. To be it, that is way over the top.
Chris Tucker in The Fifth Element. That is the female Rosie Perez right there.
Big time.
And Joe Pesci in Lethal Weapon 2, 3 and 4.
Yeah, he's annoying in that. Mm. I can't
massively
watch him.
Mm. Kevin Bradley at D. Sayeti said Mac from Mac and Me.
How dare that?
No, the kid in the wheelchair is overselling stuff,
oh,
but not
gotcha.
Him.
Gotcha. Kevin James in Paul Blart Mall Cop 3. They made a third one.
There's not a third one, is there?
Wow.
The one we're making. Let's talk about that right now.
Or just in general Paul Blart, because that guy's annoying.
Yeah.
And Sylvester Stallone for the aptly named Over the Top.
Yes. Isn't that the one about the arm?
Yeah, it is.
Masterpiece.
Bloody great. KC at Fallen Angel 2106 said William Shatner in any Star Trek film.
Yeah.
Come on!
Hugo Weaving in The Matrix and Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight.
Ooh. I suppose he kind of is, but it's brilliant.
A masterful.
LT Goodluck at the Governor 505 says Gary Oldman for True Romance.
Oh. Yeah.
Willem Dafoe in The Boondock Saints and Jack Nicholson in Wolf.
Yeah. Yeah, way, way over the top.
Oh, yeah. Right, I'm going to try and say this right, so apologies if I get this wrong. Squibardry.
There you
That's
go.
That's not right, surely.
Done a mark there.
Squibardry Pod said Lie a Lie with Jim Carrey, Jim Belushi in Animal House, and Alan Tudyk in Dodgeball.
Yes.
Pirate Steve.
Yeah.
Jim Carrey's very popular coming through on social media.
Yeah, he's
everything he's ever
top.
Done.
Always. Yeah. Josh Hickman at Reffing Movies says Chris Tuck in Fifth Element, Tom Cruise in Tropic Thunder.
Oh,
yeah,
my
in a good
God.
One.
Yes. And Wallace Shawn in The Princess Bride.
Yep.
Yep. Massively over the top.
Daniel at Zandatsu Lariat. God, these guys are playing tricks on me.
You've done her over on purpose.
Yeah.
You stitched her up.
Wait until Scorey Feldman.
Oi!
This guy said Clancy Brown as the Kurgan in Highlander.
Yeah.
Oh, Bill Paxton as Hudson in Aliens.
Of course.
Yes. Ooh. And Wesley Snipes as Simon Phoenix in Demolition Man.
Great film. Great
performance.
I've
seen that for years.
No, that's... Mm. rewatch.
Maybe.
It's actually on my list. I will bring it out at some point soon. It's great.
Amazing. SDGS hashtag Geek Squad at South Devon Geeks said Jim Carrey and Ace Ventura. Of course.
Yes.
Jay Muse in Clerks 2.
No. That's an Oscar-winning performance. It's meant to be like that.
Such rage. And Charlton Heston in Planet of the Apes. Oh, my God.
That's an obvious one now I think about it.
Yeah.
Shit, I should have had that.
Chomping at the bit on that one. Scott at Scofi said Faye Dunaway in Mommy Dearest. Yeah. Brian Blessed in Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
Shit, man.
And Gregory Peck in The Boys from Brazil.
I love that film.
I'll be honest, I haven't heard of that one.
Oh, yeah, it's like a weird sci-fi about these clones of Hitler.
I know what I'm doing tonight. Yeah. And then finally, we've got Guy at Guy Chaudoir, I think. Guy, if I've said your name wrong, sorry, it was Mark's fault. Jesse Eisenberg in Batman vs. Superman.
Yeah. Annoying.
Yes. Johnny Depp in Mordecai.
No one has seen that.
Nope. And finally, Sacha Baron Cohen in everything.
Yeah, very good.
So keep them coming, guys. We love it.
So many good ones on social media. So many. I didn't bother writing down all the Nicolas Cage ones because it was just on every single person.
Too many.
Hundreds of them. Whose next topic is it?
And that would be me.
Oh.
So this time around, we focused on actors. Next time around, I want to focus on directors. I want you to come with your list of your top three awful movies from great directors.
Amazing.
Oh, incredible.
This is Ground Control.
We've been to our local View Cinema to see Valerian. This is Luc Besson's take on the long-running French comic book series Valerian and Laureline. In the film, Valerian, played by Dane DeHaan, and Laureline, played by Cara Delevingne, are agents for a human military force who become embroiled in intergalactic hijinks involving a mysterious alien race, a corrupt commander, and a shape-shifting prostitute. There's also, for some reason, a space ferret that shits pearls. Which is nice.
Yeah. He ain't lying.
Yeah.
He's not took drugs right now. That is exactly what happened.
Yeah. It's legit.
Gemma, thoughts?
So, Ben, you've got a little saying that I absolutely love whenever you say it. So I'm going to use it for this.
Mm-hmm.
This is beautiful garbage.
Yeah, true story.
Visually, this is absolutely gorgeous. The 3D element is used to perfection. But it's also what Cher Horowitz says in Clueless. You know, it's a full-on Monet. So far away, this is absolutely beautiful to see. But up close, it's a big old mess.
Wow.
Mark.
11 years ago, I went out with a girl called Jodie, right? This is true.
Oh, God, this is going to get dark.
No, it's nothing too dark. So this is the truth. She won't listen. Now, this is before
she's
I
dead
met,
now.
This is before, yeah, this is before I met my wife. And I was dating her for about 6 months, and she's a really nice-looking girl. Everywhere I went, everyone was like, she's beautiful. She's such a nice girl.
Bragging now.
She is, though. She was absolutely gorgeous. So I took her to meet my mates one day, some of the guys that listen, Benny, Ben, people like that, Boov. And we met up in this bar, and I brought her in, and they all said, God, she's lovely, isn't she? She's so nice. I was like, yeah. We sat down, and by about half an hour, they all said to me, why are you with her? She's an absolute idiot. Like, there's nothing to her. There's no substance. She doesn't do anything. I can't have a conversation. I'm struggling here, Mark. And I was like, yeah, I've tried to dump her for about 4 months now. The 4 months I was with her were the longest I've ever had in my life. It felt like 2 years. She looked great. She looked unreal, but there was nothing to her. If she was a film, she would be Valerian. Sorry, Jodie, but it's true.
So, Jodie, if you're listening,
you're hugs. Valerian.
Hugs, Jodie.
You've got nothing to you, but at least you look nice.
And that's exactly it. So, Ben.
Oh, I mean, you know, there are a lot of great visuals, lots of really cool, interesting alien designs and beautiful set pieces, but I just didn't give a shit about any of it. I've never felt that a film was so hollow than this. It didn't move me in any way, it didn't entertain me in any way. It was just like having an epileptic fit for 2 hours. It was just things flashing in front of my eyes, and then it ended and I was able to go home and
like,
rest.
Like death.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was... I
2 hours, 17 minutes felt like 4 hours.
Oh,
I don't know. That was
like
horrendous.
It was a week.
Oh, God.
Yeah, there we go.
Can we
rate it?
It was Luc Besson essentially trying to do his own version of Star Wars, and it didn't work. It was his big space opera. But the thing is, he already did that with Fifth Element, and Fifth Element's great. This was absolute stinking dog egg.
I think where it went wrong, and we'll get, you know, straight into this, is the casting. I don't think you're going to get much out of these guys. So what's the main guy called again?
Dane DeHaan.
Dane DeHaan.
So I felt he was doing his absolute best to be... What's the guy from The Matrix? Keanu Reeves. The way he talked, the way his characteristics were, the way he's moved, everything about him was like he'd watched that and gone, I'm going to try and be wooden and dry and be responsive just like that. And even the voice was like, yes, I know what you're saying. I totally agree. Wasn't it? Or everything he did. There was no kind of dynamic of high pitch or low pitch. I will talk like this for the whole film and I have loads of dialogue. I will bore you to death, but don't worry, in a minute you're going to get to see Rihanna do a dance performance. That was the film.
Yeah.
And I was like, when Rihanna came on, I was like, at least I can fucking see something different.
The thing is, I agree with you, but I don't think that was intentional. I don't think he tried to be this kind of reserved, cool guy. I just think he's a shit actor with no charisma. And I know you quite like him, Gemma, don't you, Dane DeHaan?
Oh, but not anymore.
I see nothing in him. This character, the character of Valerian, was a Han Solo-type character. So it needed an actor with Harrison Ford-type charisma. And Dane DeHaan has no charisma whatsoever, and he looks like a fucking smack addict.
Yeah.
Doesn't he? Doesn't he look unwell? He has those massive bags under his eyes. The kid needs a nap.
He's not a chick magnet, as he claims to be, but he clearly went to the Jai Courtney School of Acting, because he's dead behind the eyes.
Yep.
That no way is someone of the caliber of Cara Delevingne, or genuinely forgot her name then, because that's how memorable this film was. But no way is someone like her into the likes of him.
No. Or she shouldn't be in the lead role of a big film that's kind of a summer blockbuster. It's kind of the summer blockbuster
time. They wanted it to be. It's not.
Yeah.
She was okay.
I thought she was okay.
She shouldn't be having the lead role.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, her eyebrows do most of the acting for her, because all she does is smirk and raise her eyebrows.
Yeah.
That's her whole skill set. I believe she's got more in her. I think if she was given a good role, she could deliver more. I think she has some talent to give, but not in this film.
I actually like her in Paper Towns. Now, I know that's a bit of a lady film, but it's actually quite good, and she is very good in it.
She was in Suicide Squad, wasn't she?
She was. Yeah. She was Enchantress.
Couldn't really bear in that.
No.
She was doing my head in.
Yeah, but I think she's more reserved for behind the main actor. This is not her film to be sort of carrying it on her shoulders.
No.
Shocking. And actually two leads. So, you know, what hope have you got for the rest of the cast?
And the rest of the cast was such an odd collection of otherwise good actors. So Clive Owen was in it, who's just disappeared off the face of the planet for the last decade. He was in it in an utterly thankless role, didn't do anything. Ethan Hawke turned up in a fucking absurd role.
He was on screen.
And as we mentioned, Rihanna as well.
But how long was he on screen for? About
2 minutes.
About two minutes. And it was over the top.
And he was just sort of cackling away. Yeah. And
yeehaw! He could have made this topic.
Yeah,
could have,
to be fair.
As a space pimp.
What is he doing?
I don't know.
He was just playing the piano, wasn't he? And just sort of going, yee-haw, shut him, cow.
He's got debt. Yeah, he's got big debt. And Rihanna.
I thought she was really good.
Now, I really liked her too. She was actually the saving grace of this film. That whole dance sequence where she's on the pole and she morphs into all these different looks, I absolutely adored.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed that. But again, you know, a singer should not be the focal point of why a film is really good.
Hey, she's come on leaps and bounds since Battleships.
Big time.
That's the sort of... I didn't think she could ever get higher than that. You know, this is one where I'm like, wow.
Also, there's the most annoying character that I've seen since Jar Jar Binks. Not only the that little creature that shits pearls, but the three elephant duck Jar Jar Binks-esque tribute act. Oh my God, I just wring a neck around them, like put them in an oven, roast them for 2 hours. I don't care.
See, when we got out the car, I said to Ben that exact same thing. I said, you know the ones with the really long noses? And he said to me, no, it's not Jar Jar Binks you're thinking of. You know, in episode one, the guy that sells the pod, what's his name?
Watto. They look exactly like Watto.
That's what I did. So I clicked after he said it and went, yeah, it's not Jar Jar Binks.
God, yes.
It's Watto. It's three Wattos with Jar Jar Binks' personality.
Yeah.
They should all have a headshot. Absolutely annoying. I'm sorry. Anytime they're on the screen, it's like, oh, fuck's sake.
Jar Jar Binks times three.
Oh, Christ.
No one.
We have mentioned about how there's a lot of great visuals, but even that, I don't think they were that great, because some of it looked so plasticky, and you can tell that it was expensively rendered, but it didn't look real. It never felt like I could reach my hand out and touch any of this scenery. It just felt like ones and zeros on a computer. It felt like a quite a nice painting, but not reality in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, and Luc Besson should be better than that.
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing. He's got a good team behind him. Lucy looked good.
Mm.
You know, Lucy is not a great film, but it looked good. I feel like I could be in that world. You're totally right. I just looked at it and thought, it's like the Avatar sort of look, you know, and it's just like, this isn't real, and I know it's not real, and you've got real actors. It's not all CGI. You've got actual humans. I don't even know the count as human actors, some of these people, but Dreadful. Absolutely shit.
Like a budget Guillermo del Toro.
But it's Luc Besson. He gave us Leon.
I know.
He gave us The Fifth Element. Mm. He's a good director. It's not like he's an up-and-comer and we're like, oh, he's got potential.
Mm.
It's even worse than Passengers, I think.
Oh my god, don't. Just that memory
the last
again.
Sci-fi we had.
The thing is, I could kind of live with it if it was a cheap throwaway film that hadn't taken a lot of effort. But this film is the most expensive independent film in history. There's no studio behind this. He used a lot of his own money, Besson, and raised it independently, you know, from other investors. I forget how much it cost, but it's a couple hundred million, I think.
Crikey.
And it's a lot of money to waste. And I read something the other day that he designed over 200 different alien species for the film. Why bother? What a waste of your fucking time, lad.
Yeah.
Make a good film instead.
Or just stay at home and watch Leon on DVD. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And it says a lot when the characters you do remember out of those 200 species is three Wattos. You know?
The standout for me is that the both of you have said the acting that saved your grace was Rihanna. That should be the poster. Yeah. You know.
At least Rihanna's in it.
Yeah.
Oh, and hold on. Why the fuck is Rutger Hauer in it for 2 seconds at the start of the film?
Ridiculous.
Hey, wait, he did Hobo with a Shotgun. He's literally going for anything that's coming his way.
But don't hire Rutger Hauer and use him in one 10-second scene and then never show him again. What a waste.
This would have worked if it was a French film. Now, I know obviously it's a French comic book, but at least it would have been along the lines of, say, Night Watch or Day Watch. Mm. Like the Russian vampire film.
Yeah.
They are good series.
Yeah.
And maybe if they did stick to their guns and actually hire a French cast, this probably would have been a little bit different and actually take time to write a good story.
Yeah, get some actual actors.
Yeah.
I don't understand why it's called Valerian and the yada, 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 yada. The comic books were called Valerian and Laureline. And in the film, Valerian and Laureline are co-leads. They both do as much. They're both equally important. So why did they name the film just after the bloke? I think that's unfair and bloody sexist. Mm,
that's a podcast in its own right.
You know what I'm like with sexism. I hate it.
Yeah, you find it degrading.
Yeah, I'm telling you now, this film, don't go and see it. If you're listening and you're thinking of going to go and see it, if we haven't put you off enough, you know, go and see it and then, you know, send us your thoughts. But yeah. If you enjoyed this, I think you're not quite right in the head.
If you suffer from crippling insomnia, go and see this film.
Yeah.
You'll be fine.
The Cure.
Oh, yeah. You just want to see your life just burn. Watch this film.
I'm just glad that we don't have to talk about it much more.
Let's score it.
We actually scored it already. Amazing.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh God, Mark.
3. That's all right. Just for the 3 characters that annoyed me. A point each.
Gemma.
I'll be a tiny bit fairer. I'm going to give it 4. This gives me the feeling of what Ghost in the Shell was.
Mm, yes, very
so
much.
So I think, you know, I'm not going to knock the visuals, but everything else I will. So 4.
Yeah, it was wank. I'm going to give it 4 as well. So that gives it a skip to the end overall score of 4 out of 10.
You got a hell of a lot of cocaine here, man.
I know.
Do you realize how much fucking coke you have here?
Oh, tell me.
I don't know, but it's a fucking lot.
It's competition time! Oh, yeah! That's pretty good. I've got no throat now. No.
I was going to say, you're right, hun.
Right then, so it's competition time. If you listened to our last episode, which was a damn good episode, we gave away some kick-ass prizes, starting with a Dark Bunny Stranger Things shirt, the new design for the second series. Real simple question, Millie Bobby Brown plays which character? And I think we pretty much gave you the answer on the actual episode. So Ben, who is it?
11.
It is. So James, Lucy, you'll be getting one of those in the post. Also, our good friends at Warner Brothers gave us a Dunkirk bundle, which consisted of a notebook, a belt, a pocket watch, a shot glass. Really simple question here. Who directed Dunkirk?
Christopher Nolan.
He did, and Matthew Engler will be getting that on Facebook, so thank you very much. And you've probably seen the Girls Trip bundle that people have been retweeting and stuff. All you had to do is leave us some iTunes ratings. They did that, and you've probably seen on Twitter people have been winning it and sharing their prizes. Mm-hmm. Good on you guys. We really appreciate you doing that because some of the reviews are really nice to read. You'll see that we publish them anyway on our Twitter and Facebook, but it's nice, isn't it, to sit there and read them and think, yeah, people like what we do. As I said at the start of this episode, we've got some kick-ass prizes. So starting off with our good friends Last Exit to Nowhere. Have you seen their brand new Jaws t-shirt? It's really, really smart.
Beautiful.
Look at this. Wow.
Lovely.
It's amazing. Unbelievable. Let's make it really easy for these guys. Who directed Jaws?
Ooh, that's a toughie.
Tough one there. Our good friends Dark Bunny Tees, they're not going anywhere. These guys have come up trumps. So they've given us the brand new Stranger Things design, the white one, the arcade t-shirt. They've given us a new Doctor Strange shirt, the brand new Game of Thrones shirt, the new Thor shirt. Pretty much one of all their new range, cool. Which is very, very generous. What I want people to do, because I want our fans to win this, not those horrible people on Twitter that only enter competitions. I want you to tell us your favourite Skip to the End moment. Tweet it in, Facebook it, email it. Just that simple as that. It doesn't have to be an episode, just your favourite moment, and we'll bring it back on the next episode and you'll win that massive bundle. I'm intrigued to see what people say about that. It'd be nice. Atomic Blonde just come out. Have you seen the bundle for that from Universal? Got Shades, T-shirt, the big box, keyring, loads of stuff. James McAvoy plays which character? Are you looking forward to that film? Have you seen much about it?
I actually am. I think it should be pretty decent.
Jane Wick.
Exactly that. And this is the big one. So our good friends at Richer Sounds have come up again. This is really nice. They've given us some £200 AKG Bluetooth headphones, the ones with no wires or anything. Really
beautiful.
Decent. Ooh. I didn't realise, but they got the Watt Hi-Fi Award for the best headphones of last year. Crikey. So we've got one pair of them.
How much will we get for them on eBay? who are we giving those away to?
I mean, Gumtree. We're going to basically give this to a iTunes review. I want to make it like that, because that's a good prize for someone taking the time. Don't just put good podcasts. I want to read nice stuff.
Fair. It's a bloody good prize. It better be a bloody good review.
Yeah, that's how you're going to do it. And I'm going to basically... five stars. Got it. Five star.
And also, just take the time to check your spelling and grammar. That's all I ask.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm a bit of a Nazi when it comes to that sort of stuff.
It doesn't mean shit to Ben if it's not spelt right. So, you know, most of my tweets. What we'll do, we'll come back in a few weeks' time and we'll announce the winners of all of these incredible competitions.
What? I said, do I look like a beautiful blonde with big tits and an ass that tastes like French vanilla ice cream?
No.
No. Okay, then why are you telling me all this bullshit, huh?
What, you want to fuck me?
It's now time for movie masturbation.
That's not going to
stop. Is this a thing now? Please tell me this is not a thing. Stop trying to make fetch happen.
It's not going to happen. I've got my fingers competition time. Sorry, that's all we're having. That's my trademark. Sorry. Deal with it.
And she used my phrase beautiful garbage, which is trademarked then as well. Do you know what I mean?
I did. I did acknowledge you, to
piss
be fair.
Taker. Piss taker.
Poochie, go back to your own planet.
All right, Broadband Mountain.
I did see that tweet a lot. That made me laugh.
So it's movie masturbate. So on this section, what we do is we pick a name out of the pot of an actor or an actress. And what we three do is come back with our most favourite performance from that particular person. So on the last episode, we chose Sir Anthony Hopkins because that is his official title and nothing more. So I want to hear what your favourite performance of this amazing gent is. So Mark, I want to start with you because I know you've got a bit of a relationship with him, haven't you?
Yeah, hey? I just interviewed him, world exclusive, any podcast appearance ever.
So. You know, whatever.
which podcast was that?
That's markandme.com.
Beautifully done. So come on, Mark, give it to me.
He was on this film for only 16 minutes, which blows my mind. He's probably the first character in my life that scared me. It's Silence of the Lambs.
Mine too.
Great choice, both.
It's something that will stay with me forever. I think I've told this story a few times where it was the one film in our house that I wasn't allowed to watch. So my parents were very big on Exorcist. My mom was like, you can't watch Exorcist because she's a churchgoer, Bible basher. So, she's not a Bible basher. She likes, you know, she goes to church. So that's not the foot of 8-year-old son should be watching.
Probably not.
She let me watch Aliens, Enter the Dragon, all that sort of stuff.
What about Way of the Dragon?
Way of the Dragon as well.
Every episode this happens.
I loved it when Chuck Norris fought in that film. It was amazing. But yeah, this was the one videotape I wasn't allowed to watch. And I used to think it was probably my dad's sort of porn stash, and that's what he used to say, oh, this is the stash you shouldn't go near. But I knew that he had, you know, Television X like the rest of us and Men and Motors. So at the end of the day...
Granada, Men and Motors.
This was the tape under my mum and dad's bed that I wasn't allowed to watch. What happened when they went, you know, out? What am I going to do? Went downstairs. The scary thing back then, it didn't automatically start at the start, did it, with like a DVD? It would leave at a certain point, so you'd have to watch it and then leave it at like 1 hour 56. Yeah. So if my dad went in and was like, hang on, this isn't where the point we left.
Yeah.
But this scared the shit out of me. I regretted it. I was about 9. I found this videotape, went downstairs. My mom and dad said I can't watch this, so I'm instantly going to watch it. Put it on my own. It was late. They were either in bed or something, and it scared the shit out of me. The first time you see him on screen and he's got that blood around his face and the way he talks, it was menacing. As to be an 8 or 9-year-old watching this character, it did fuck me up. It's because it's real. You know, he could genuinely chew your face off. It's not like a poltergeist or a ghost, and it's stuck with me till now. I'm still scared by that character every time he comes on screen. 16 minutes and he got an Oscar.
Well,
that's amazing, isn't it?
It's incredible.
It's the Beetlejuice thing again. I didn't realise he had so little screen time, but again, he dominates that picture.
That's a topic one day. Top performances under 20 minutes, Denny. But no, I'm definitely going with... It's a hard one to leave off, but I want to hear why you also agree, because you didn't... You know, you didn't know me back then. You weren't looking under my parents' bed.
No, I wasn't.
You were under there.
I was on top of it.
What? What?
Wow.
That came out completely wrong.
Yeah.
This is a skip to the end exclusive. Gemma, why were you in Mark's parents' bed in the late 80s?
Wow.
Early 90s.
Right now, my dad's getting a knock on the door from, like, the Child Protection Act.
Operation
yeah.
U-Tree.
Yeah. That's, I'm not going to ask you. No, that, I'm, just move along.
Let's go back to MMD.
Yeah, so why did you pick this film performance?
So this performance, it was cold, it was manipulative, and it was calculating, and it was a maniac that wasn't screaming in your face, and he wasn't running around with a great big cleaver going, I'm going to kill you. This was all meticulous, and this was all to do with mind games rather than physical violence. I mean, yeah, sure, we saw it. We saw the result of what Hannibal Lecter could be capable of, obviously with that sort of flesh-winged angel that we see sort of hanging at the top of the roof. But it's the fact that he's like this human equivalent of a magnet. You're drawn to him. You shouldn't be, because, you know, as soon as he's in your head, that's it, game over. But you're drawn to everything he says. You're just on a hook with him. He's just... magnificent to watch.
Amazing. And once I always said, like, before we had the TV series, I thought no one will ever, ever, ever give that performance justice. Ever.
We were proven wrong.
Yeah.
And we were.
And that's the thing now. Mads Mikkelsen, to me, is Hannibal Lecter. If I think Hannibal, I think Mads.
Yeah.
Yeah. What credit that is.
Yeah.
And it doesn't belittle it any way.
No.
You know, they're both incredible in their own way, and they're very different.
Mm-hmm.
But it's weird that now we associate Mads Mikkelsen, who's a good mate of mine, I saw last weekend.
Oh,
but,
yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
You an M-dog.
Yeah. So that's it. I'm surprised, Ben. I thought you might have been on the same with us this time.
See, I agree with you entirely that it's his best performance, but it's not my favourite.
No.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gone with Odin in Thor.
Oh my God, yes.
Now, you guys know, I've said it so many times on the podcast, Thor is my favourite of the Marvel films. It absolutely blew my tits off when I saw it. I saw it at least twice at the cinema, maybe even 3 times, I can't remember now. But I absolutely love it. And the reason why I love Hopkins as Odin is because he brings this Shakespearean gravity to the film. It feels like a Shakespearean tragedy at times. And one of the reasons why that is the case is because it was directed by Kenneth Branagh. It was intentional on the part of Marvel. They thought, we want it to seem Shakespearean, so let's bring in someone who's a Shakespearean heavyweight in Kenneth Branagh. And he directs it as such. And it really all kind of leans on that strong, powerful performance of Odin. And the whole plot, really, of Thor is very Shakespearean. I don't know how much you guys know your Shakespeare. I know you do, Mark. I know you're
always
you're a big Shakespeare
guy.
Aren't you?
Before we start recording today, get the mic levels. I'm sitting there just reading all the time.
Exactly.
Love it.
He bloody loves The Tempest.
He bloody does as well.
Bloody do.
But Thor essentially is Henry IV. It's about a king who has a layabout son. He doesn't know whether he's worthy to ascend to the throne. It's about how he has to deal with him. That's what Thor is. So bringing in a kind of Shakespearean element to it makes perfect sense. And he's just so bold and so powerful. And there's one argument that he has with Chris Hemsworth's Thor when he says to him, "You are a vain, greedy, cruel boy." And then Hemsworth spouts back with, "And you are an old man and a fool." And that moment gives me goosebumps. It's 3 seconds of film in essentially a kid's film. But it gives me goosebumps because the two of them are so brilliant facing each other. And I just believe that Anthony Hopkins is the Norse god.
Yeah.
The Allfather. I believe that he is.
Yeah. That's true. Like Loki, I believe he's Loki.
Yeah.
What is Loki's real name?
Tom Hiddleston.
But it's true. And it's on. And you don't normally get it right. Marvel sometimes do miscast. That's the one thing we have noticed. But I can't agree more. I don't like the second film very much. But
it's not very good. No. The Dark World isn't
but
great.
But I'm just... At the moment, I'm going to probably order some adult range, you know, like for mother care that you put on kids for when we go and see Thor 3 review. I am terrified
holding
that
back.
Ben is going to be running around the cinema.
It's possible. But, it's possible.
The poster has already got you quite hard.
Mate, that it's now the picture on my phone, the poster.
Yeah.
I've watched the trailer half a dozen times. I am super excited by Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, it's a beaut.
It's one of those things that when we do the review, if it's shit, everyone's going to be like, oh, poor Ben.
I'll cry. I will actually cry live on air.
So, guys, you want to hear what the social media said?
Yep.
There's loads. So, Holly N has said The Edge, which you guys ripped me for when we did survival films, but that was one of the most popular choices.
Is that the wolf one?
It's the the bear.
Oh, the bear one.
Yeah.
Same animal.
You need to watch it, dude.
Nah.
Liz Marshall has said The World's Fastest Indian, which I've never seen.
No, me neither.
No, I don't
but
think
a lot of people said that. CNC Geekcast said In Fracture, which is with Ryan Gosling. It's a good film.
Mm.
It's a very good film.
It's
you not
got,
seen it?
No,
fairly,
no. But...
fairly recent one, is it?
Probably about 10 years, I reckon.
Oh. I don't think it's that old, is it? I don't know.
Seven, something like that.
4, 3, yeah. 2. Who cares?
At Superstamp said The Elephant Man.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
Great film.
Such a good film. I haven't seen it for years, though.
No.
James Botchel has said The Remains of the Day. Ooh. A film I've never seen.
Very, not my cup of tea, that.
Very British, stiff upper lip, kind of.
Yeah, it's. I'm sure it's amazing.
Yeah.
Wayne Moore has said Nixon.
Yeah, good film.
I've never watched all that.
It is long.
It's not my cup of tea, but a lot of people say it's very, very good.
It is.
Talk Stuff Podcast has said The Wolfman. Have you seen that film?
No.
It
no.
is absolutely awful. But they did say the performance is so good he changes accent in every scene just because he can. So I think that would be a bit of fun.
I like that he's looking at that as a positive and, yeah. and just not an inconsistency of performance.
Old Boys Podcast has said Magic. Have you seen this film about the puppet?
The puppet one?
Yeah.
No, I've never
no.
seen it. But
you
the front
need
cover,
to watch it.
The front cover of the DVD in and of itself is terrifying.
Susan, which is at CPT Fudgical, something like that. Honestly, they've said Transformers because he phoned that shit in with no fucks given. I still, at this moment in time, don't understand why he did it. And that is annoying for me.
Dear.
I just, why did you do it?
God knows.
A couple more. We got Randy, which is at Rye6Crate, Mask of Zorro. There's some really bad films. Sorry about this. And finally, at Raising Kane has said Meet Joe Black. Good film. Like that film. Always makes me want to eat peanut butter. Have you seen Brad Pitt is walking around with that stick with peanut butter on?
Yeah.
Oh.
Have you seen that film?
No.
You've never seen Meet Joe Black?
No.
Don't bother. But, I think it's time to pick someone else out of the hat.
I think so.
Who's
going to?
It's not me. I did the last
it's mine.
One. Go on then, Mike. Do a drum roll.
Oh, I feel like there's a lot of pressure because it's quite a big occasion. On the next episode, we will be mass debating over... Michael Fassbender.
Amazing.
I always said, if I had to fuck a guy, you know, I mean, had to, if my life depended on it, I'd fuck Elvis.
It's now time for the rewatch. And after Ben picked Super Mario Brothers, which
classic.
I still feel a little bit damaged by, if I'm not... I'll be honest, it's stuck with me a bit longer than I expected.
Yes.
I think it's that picture you tweeted out with the tongue from...
It was a long road to recovery, wasn't it?
It still harrows me, that. I don't like that image. But to try and get rid of it, I picked a classic. I hope that you agree with that term. We'll find out very shortly. But True Romance, a bit of a big film back in the 90s. Try and sum it up, really. It's quite simple. The film's set in Detroit, where we meet a lovely pop culture geek who, after only meeting a cool girl after one day, decides to marry her. They go off and steal cocaine from the pimp and then try to sell this in Hollywood. Meanwhile, the owners of this big bunch of cocaine, the mob, are very, very unhappy, which you'd probably expect. We then basically see the film, well, the mob are then tracking down to try and reclaim these drugs. The worst way of summing up true
drugs?
Romance.
Drugs.
This is like if you asked an 8-year-old to sum up this film.
Except you just need the sound effect. And then the mob came.
Nino, the police come on. Thanks, guys. I just wanted to keep it quite brief, but not that brief. So in true traditional fashion, let's just, because we always do this, to the mighty God. Ben, what's your thoughts on this movie?
I hadn't seen this film in so long, at least 10 years, and I'd forgotten how good it is, how great the performances are, how crisp Tony Scott's direction is, and of course, how magnificent Tarantino's script is, like they always are. Just a damn fine film.
Wow. Gemma.
I'd forgotten how long ago I'd seen this. This must have been probably when I was about 14, 15, and I never gave it another rewatch again. But my God, what a lovely way to watch it again. I'd forgotten about everything. Mm-hmm. So it was like watching a brand new film. Sharp script, killer story, ice cool characters, and a crazy love between these two people that you actually want to root for. You want to see them sort of overcome all of, you know, the big bad mob and Nino. You're so cool. It's so cool. Yeah.
You love it then?
Oh, a tiny bit. Yeah, I guess so.
The fact that we have, and this is just insane, Christian Slater, Patricia Arquette.
Go on. There we go. Right. Well done.
Dennis Hopper, Val Kilmer, Gary Oldman, Brad Pitt, Christopher Walken.
Come on.
Samuel L. Jackson, Saul Rubinek.
Our mate Saul.
James Gandolfi?
Try again.
The guy from Sopranos.
No. Say it again.
Come on, commit to it. Break it down.
Gandolfini.
Yeah! Well,
yes! Mark's learned to read after 3 years. We're celebrating.
Gold star for Mark.
But that cast is mind-blowing. Yeah.
And it's amazing when you think how many of them had little bit parts. Brad Pitt's in 3 scenes, and I'd forgotten he was in the film. Samuel L. Jackson gets punked out in 1 scene, gets killed as soon as he shows up. It's crazy.
And they all are incredible for what they're on. Like, mm-hmm. Brad Pitt, you just said you forgot he's in it. When you do see him in it, you're like, this is one of his best roles ever. The fact
hilarious.
He's loving it and having so much fun.
Yes, he suits a stoner.
Incredible. Now, let's just start with the big one. We need to cover this off. The two main actors, which are probably 85% of screen time. Have you ever seen a better performance from Christian Slater?
No.
Not at all.
Ever?
No.
Mm-mm.
Talk to me.
Oh my God, I love him.
It's a shame, really, that his career didn't come to much. He's a good actor. I don't think he's particularly versatile. I don't think he has great range, but he's good at what he does, and this is what he does. But I think because he didn't display great range in the 90s, his career kind of petered out. He's now doing great work in Mr. Robot, which I think you've seen, haven't you, Gemma?
The other half has, but it is a... I've just finished The Handmaid's Tale. That is going to be the next TV show.
Not the question
show.
I asked.
I'm going to see it.
Cheers. Mark, you've not seen Mr. Robot yet, have you?
Simple question, no, Ben.
No, exactly. Thank you. See what I mean? Easy question, easy answer, Gemma. That's how it's done, yeah? So he's having a bit of a career revival, but it's a shame he didn't do more when he was at his peak, because he's so good in this. He's so charming and cool. It's no wonder Patricia Arquette's character, Alabama, says you're so cool, because he is. But he's also really intense. When he snaps, when he gets violent, he's thoroughly ruthless and utterly believable. It's a great performance.
Absolutely amazing. Every single word I agree with. He is the ultimate core. When I watch it and he's sitting in the cinema and he's just on his own, you just want to be him.
Mm-hmm.
He is the guy that you just want to dress like, look like, his hair, everything about him I just absolutely love. Before I fell in love with completely in a non-gay way, but in a love for another man way, in Ryan Gosling, he had my heart, I reckon, from this film. He's just the one I want to be.
I've realised now that 77 episodes and 3 years have skipped the end. There's just been one long coming out process for Mark.
Well, don't spoil it, but on the next episode, there's a big announcement.
Save it for episode 100.
Gemma.
He's got no hang-ups. That's why he's so cool. There's none of this anxiety about doing something or thinking about problems. This guy has no problems whatsoever. He's just met this, you know, Bobby Dazzler of a woman.
Bobby Dazzler.
I have not heard a human use the term Bobby Dazzler since the 1930s.
Amazing. Now you know we're going to get hashtag Bobby Dazzler. Please, if you're listening right now, get it trending.
She's a re-Bobby Dazzler.
But yeah, that's what she likes to be known as, the Bobby Dazzler of call girls. Bobby Dazzler.
But she's, you know, like, they make a cool team and they're perfect for each other. They are actually a match made in heaven.
Yeah.
Like, it couldn't have been any better way of doing it. I mean, they don't care about the baggage that each of them have with them. They love each other because they love each other. They have a strong physical connection, an emotional connection, and they work so well as a team.
If a girl walked into a cinema, sat by me, spilt popcorn over me and probably touched my leg a little bit in a naughty way and got me a little bit fired up and then went at the end of the film, do you want to go and get some pie and talk about the film? I would probably want to marry them the next day because that's the dream girl, isn't it? That wants to go and get some pie and talk about films.
Hey, that's the Bobby Dazzler right
there. That is it. There's not enough Bobby Dazzlers out there. That's the problem.
And Patricia Arquette is an absolute Bobby Dazzler. You know, in this film, she's so adorable and so winning that you understand completely why he falls in love with her, because I did.
Yeah.
She's just wonderful.
I love the fact she has a flirtiness to everything she does, even when she talks to James Gandolfini's character, Virgil, and everything she says at the very beginning, she finishes off with this little giggle, like as if she's just trying to win him over, but she knows she's in grave danger. She is. She's just, I want to be mates with her too.
Yeah.
Again, what's she been up to now? I know we got her.
She won an Oscar.
For Boyhood.
Was it Boyhood? Yeah. Okay, that's fair enough.
She's not gone. Oh, her career's gone downhill.
I don't know what I'm talking about anymore. That's a good scene, though. I love that scene because then we see the punch in the cross of the face. Oh,
it's
nasty.
Brutal, isn't it?
Brutal. Yeah.
But it's like a real fight. It's none of this sort of flighty, kind of well-choreographed fight scene. This is hardcore. He's throwing her around like a rag doll. You know, Virgil does not give two shits that Alabama is a lady. She's got his drugs. He wants them under any means necessary. Just the fact that she is a human being, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
He will kill her.
And James Gandolfini's a big dude. He's just a big physical threat. That was a large part of his charm as Tony Soprano. He's brilliant in that.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. Do you think you both said you haven't watched it for, you know, nearly a decade. Mm. What was the violence like for you? Because I forgot it was this violent. Because it's obviously Tarantino's involved as well. You know he's been helping out and doing stuff, not just with the script. I'm sure he was on set going, more blood, like he normally does. The amount of blood and the way it's portrayed, like you said, it's not over the top silly. It's real. Like the Reservoir Dogs feel that we talked about when it's the right amount of blood. My God, some of those shootouts and the blood scenes were just perfect.
Yeah, they looked so cool. The main shootout at the end in the director's or the film producer's hotel room, that's just so violent and so bloody. And Mark, we've talked many a times about how much you love blood and snow.
Yeah.
This was kind of a twist on blood and snow. It was blood and feathers.
Yeah, and it worked.
It worked brilliantly. So there's blood flying everywhere. There's so many hundreds and thousands of feathers just falling around the room, and it looks fantastic.
Indoor snow.
That's what it looked like. It looked like indoor snow. And Tony Scott is dead now, but he was so great at capturing that kind of stuff.
And we joke on this episode about our mates, but we are actually mates with Sol Rubinek. We are.
Well, we met him once.
Yeah, he was a nice mate.
He was amazing. We interviewed him at one of the MCM Comic Cons, and we said at the time, best person we've ever spoken to.
Yeah.
Because he just had so many cool stories.
And I forgot how much of a part in this film he was. Because if I met him again now, I'd be like, right, can we just talk about this film?
Yeah,
We're talking about some other stuff. I think Curb Your Enthusiasm and stuff like that at the time. My God, he's great in this.
Yeah.
We've talked a lot on this episode about over-the-top performances. Gary Oldman.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, Drexel.
Why can't we have a film about Drexel?
We've had listener questions where we had the whole film on one character. This is it. Yeah. This is it now.
Yeah, totally agree with this.
I want it.
And apparently, around the time that this came out, there was some mild talk of that happening, and Oldman said he was interested because he wanted to explore the backstory of this guy. I love the story about how when he went to meet with Tony Scott about this film, and Tony Scott said to him, so have you read the script? And Gary Oldman said, oh no, I haven't got around to it. What's the character? And he said, well, he's a guy who is white but thinks he's black and he's a murderous pimp. And Oldman went, I'll do it. That's all he needed to know.
Incredible. And one of his finest performances. Have we masturbated over him?
We have.
We've done it already.
Yeah, you guys went for Leon, I went for Sid and Nancy.
Of course.
I'm glad we got her. This is why she's here.
Yeah.
Amazing. Thanks, Gemmapedia.
Definitely watch how you say that name.
another big performance is Christopher Walken. He's only in one scene. He's one of the mob bosses who's looking for this missing coke, and he comes to visit Clarence's dad, played by the great Dennis Hopper, and they have this showdown where it's two men talking, and it's one of the most iconic scenes. People refer to it as either the eggplant scene or the Sicilian scene, and it's Hopper talking about the heritage of Sicilians, and it doesn't go down well with Walken's character. But it's just a masterclass of two dudes talking to each other. It's so tense and darkly funny, which is why it's pure Tarantino. That could not have come from anyone else's pen.
No.
That scene.
No. So, Tarantino, I've seen a few. We put tweets out there saying the rewatches, let us know your thoughts. Some people have said it's his best ever work for writing, you know, his best dialogue. Ben, you're like with I Am with Kevin Smith. Tarantino's your guy.
Absolutely.
That's the way I associate it. If you ever talk about it, it's Ben's guy. That's his thing. Where do you rate this in his kind of filmography? Because it's bloody good.
It is very. If we're talking purely about script, I'd say it's top three. It's not the best. Pulp Fiction has him hands down, and as does Inglourious Basterds. But I would say probably top three.
That combo, just to work together with the director, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's the point when Clifford realises his fate when he asks for a Chesterfield. His whole demeanour, he decides, you know what, if I'm going to go, I'm going to protect my boy, I'm going to protect that little Bobby Dazzler, and I am going to just let him have it. And that's where he comes up with, obviously, the heritage of Sicilians.
Yeah.
And it's just, oh, God. That whole switch when he realises he ain't going to get out of that caravan alive. Incredible. Masterful.
I just want to watch it again.
Yeah, me too. Oh, actually, you know what? That's exactly the feeling I got when I watched this film.
Yep.
I didn't actually realise how fun this whole film is. I immediately wanted to watch it again. It's just, it's going to be a film I will revisit in the next few weeks. Yeah. It's just captivating.
On the social media, people who've been following us and watching this film along with us, we've had so many say, it's in my top five, it's in my top 10. I didn't realise actually how popular it was.
Yeah, and people are buying, normally we announce it on Twitter, they're putting pictures, I've just bought a DVD, amazing. I love seeing people to get on board with
us. Absolutely, yeah. I'm just going back to the Tarantino thing. One of the things I found interesting is that Clarence is obsessed with kung fu movies, and we see him go to a kung fu triple bill at the start of the film starring Sonny Chiba. And I'm sure you guys probably know, but Sonny Chiba was then in Kill Bill. He played Hattori Hanzo.
Yep.
So it was clearly Tarantino, you know, speaking through Clarence to say, he's my guy, I love Sonny Chiba, and then he ends up using him in a film in the future.
No, I've just clicked.
Going to the score. Now, we've got our game show coming up in a bit, but the score of Hans Zimmer, I didn't actually realise this score was from True Romance, because it's associated a lot with sort of baby goods now, I think, in the UK, unfortunately. But it has, this music has this sort of naivety and this sort of childlike sort of early stage, not knowing anything about the whole world. And it's just really, I don't know, there's something really innocent about it, considering what the whole film is about.
It's a weird kind of little plinky-plinky thing, but then it builds to a crescendo. Yeah. But you only really hear the crescendo over the final credits. You only hear the early, calmer stages of it. And it wasn't an original composition from Zimmer. He used a large part of an old German piece of music, I think it is. You can find that on YouTube. I was listening to it the other day. But it's really brilliant. That I loved. I loved the theme tune, but I think sometimes the soundtrack was overbearing. The final shootout scene and then Clarence and Alabama fleeing the hotel, there's some really overbearing kind of late 80s, early 90s music blaring over it. And it's sometimes directors lean on the soundtrack too much to say, this is the emotion you should be feeling. It's like, well, the words and the action do that for me. I don't need the soundtrack to tell me what emotion I should feel. So I found it a little bit overbearing at times.
He interstellared it, didn't he? He did, exactly that. It's just
we could barely hear anyone.
I just kind of want to go up to him and say, you're a genius. You are a genius. Like Dunkirk, that work he did, and that was phenomenal. But I just wanted to just get that level and just take it down a bit sometimes. And you think someone who's that talented with that much expertise and that much kind of knowledge surely just goes into the mixer and just goes just down a little bit, you know, just too much.
Yeah.
But that blinkering sound you were talking about then, what I really like about it is that we do get it in the film probably about half an hour if you actually play how much the scenes are, but it never feels like it's overused, that bit. I think we start with it when we first meet them, you get the first time, and it kind of weaves in and out from the film, and we don't get that with many films. No. You always get the iconic music played once. That's what I like about this, and it worked for me.
They thread it through. But
Jesus Christ, Ben. Too much.
Yeah.
Turn my TV down. It's one of them moments.
I've been reading up on this, as I always do. I always go and read the trivia on IMDb and that sort of stuff, and one of the things that I found amusing was, we've already mentioned Brad Pitt's character, is it Floyd plays and he's just this stoner drug dealer, you know, the film Pineapple Express.
Yes.
Judd Apatow only came up with that film after seeing True Romance. His thought process was, I love the character of Floyd, I'd love to see what would happen if he had to then leave the house and be chased by these drug dealers.
So James Franco is long blonde.
James Franco is meant to essentially be Floyd.
It's
crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, because now you say it, I can picture it exactly the same hair, like the stoner surfer dude.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fair play to Brad Pitt for doing that role.
He's so good in it, yeah.
I love it.
He works on it.
He does.
Let's have more drug-esque kind of roles.
Oh, he's sorting out like kids' rights and divorce and shit now. We've lost him.
Busy man, isn't he?
He's gone.
Shame.
So, the thing that amazes me about this film, we've talked about how many people have said it's in their top five, top tens. It was a box office flop. It's crazy to think, isn't it, that it only became a cult hit. It wasn't a hit at the time. It got reasonable reviews. You would have thought it would have done better because Tony Scott was and is a big-name director. Even though he's dead, his work lives on. And Tarantino was coming hot off the back of Reservoir Dogs. Reservoir Dogs came out the year before this, but it died on its arse at the box office.
And those, 12 supporting actors that are there? Which are all probably won Oscars or decent recognition?
But they did since. At the time, Samuel L. Jackson was barely known. You know, James Gandolfini wasn't known at all.
True. But it's awesome. So engaging.
Yeah.
It's such a fun film.
It's a great advertisement for the concept of DVD and VHS, the fact that these films can live on and find an audience years later.
Like Clerks.
So, swing and a miss.
So yeah, it's very popular, a great film, cult classic. The ratings have been insane. The people coming on social media love it. Do we agree or disagree? I want to know your ratings. This is a big one because it doesn't quite make it into my top 10 of all time, I don't think. Yeah. But it has surprised me on just how much I loved it. So Ben, King Ben.
I like that. Can we keep that?
Yes,
King Ben.
King Ben.
Thank you. I mean, you referred to me as God earlier. Either way, God or King. Either way.
Cool.
It's an 8 for me. A very strong, very high 8.
I'm going to give it a 9 because I completely forgot how much I enjoyed this. And like I said, this is going to be played again in the very near future.
It's an 8. Mm. You know, there's some. I give out too high ratings lately. I listen back and I'm like, everything's a 9 and 10. So sorry, just because I've been too harsh on myself. It's a high 8, which is a still damn good result. So I think overall, should we give it a skip to the end 8 out of 10?
Seems fair.
Brilliant. Oh, I've enjoyed that. This is a positive
good.
One.
Good fun.
Yeah. Thank God after bloody Super Mario. So is it Gemma?
It's my turn next. So I've looked at our website, skiptothend.co.uk.
It's a bloody good, easy to access. Everything's there. It's touch of a button.
Who designed that, by the way?
Is it King Ben?
God Ben.
That's right. Yeah.
So check it out, you know, just for kicks, really, because it's great. And I was looking at my rewatch choices, and they're quite big-named films. So I wanted to maybe look at maybe a smaller film that I think quite a lot of people have heard of, but I know the majority have not. So there's a director called Rian Johnson, and he's going to be making a little film called Star Wars The Last Jedi at the end of the year. Maybe you've heard of it.
Yeah.
But for the next rewatch, we're going to watch his breakthrough debut film. And that film is called Brick. Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So, on the next episode, we will be rewatching Brick.
It's time for round two of our latest game show, Scorey Feldman. That's where we play each of our contestants a brief clip from a famous movie score, and they have to simply tell me what it is. If you get it right first time round, you get 3 points. If you want to hear it played again, you get 1 point. If you don't get it at all, and it has to be passed to your opponent, they can steal, but they too only get 1 point.
Why couldn't I say it that simple? I had to go for about 20 minutes explaining it.
That was slick.
That's it.
Solid gold.
It's because you're not King Ben.
God to me.
God, yeah.
I think I've been really kind to you this time. I think I've given you 10 here that are pretty easy. There are a couple that are tough, but I think I start off very easy anyway.
I was nice as well. People have said you didn't go too hard on them both. I could have been awful.
Yeah.
Mm.
And you surprised yourself. You're the current winner at the moment, mate.
I know.
Reigning champion.
I did not think I'd do it. But if I'd have had Gemma's 5, I wouldn't have got nearly as many as I had. So it was just the luck of the draw. Speaking of which, who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Oh, that's nice. What a gent you are.
As he shoves me down. Got me right between the eyes.
Mark is now throwing rolled up bits of paper at Gemma like the man boy that he is.
Anything to distract her right now. It's working.
I know. I can't
believe
you
focus on that and I'll just play this.
Are you ready for your first one then, Mark?
No, I'm never going
to
be.
Where are you going to have to be?
Too tense.
It's time. Here we go.
Superman.
Correct.
You know when you first hear it, you think, is that Star Wars? Just because your mind's going, shit, John Williams-esque.
It's worse because they all sound the same.
That was horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously, listen, if you're sat here right now, you're shouting it out, and I know it's easy, but it's not. For some reason, I just, that was horrible. But 3 points.
3 points to Mark. Gemma, are you ready for your first one?
I think so.
Okay, here we go.
Star Wars.
It is Star Wars.
Yay.
That's 3 points to Gemma. I told you I was going easy on you to begin with, didn't
That's
I?
That's nice, though.
I think you're just setting us up to fail. I think you're going to be like, this is nice, isn't it? And then suddenly like, this is from a Russian 1950s film that only went straight to DVD.
Battleship Potemon or whatever it is.
It's not Battleship Pokemon. It's Battleship Potemkin.
Is that what it is?
Battleship Pokemon.
Can I just say right now, you are the new Mark. She gets everything wrong. She mispronounces names. I'm seeing a lot more Gemmerisms and Markisms now. I've made one mistake today. You've made about 10.
Well, you say one mistake.
Okay. This is 10, so...
Ready for your second round, Mark?
Never. I don't want it.
Here it comes. Oh, he doesn't know it. You can hear it again if that would help.
No, because then I lose points, don't I?
Yep.
Oh, God. I don't want to listen to it again because then I lose points.
There is so much stress on your face.
You know what? It's just really annoying.
His face is going red. It's nearly as red as his hair.
What, strawberry blonde?
Oh, yeah.
He's going strawberry blonde.
Shit.
Oh, Gemma Steele, perhaps. Because I've got a feeling Gemma knows it.
I'm just going to go for it, even though it's not. The Good, Bad and the Ugly.
Correct.
Yes!
Oh, well done, mate. Well done.
Woo. Do you know what's quite bad, and you're going to go mad at this? I've never seen that film.
You're a mug. It's genuinely one of the greatest films of all time. Get involved,
I know. It's shocking.
But well done on getting that. Well done on pulling that out of the bag.
The relief on your face.
Gemma.
My God.
Your mind goes blank.
I know, it is tough. Are you ready for your next one, Gemma?
Let's do this.
Okay. Here we go.
I know this because it's always played at England games. Is it The Great Escape?
It is The Great Escape.
Yeah.
We are level pegging at 6 points apiece. It's going to start to get a little bit tougher now. Not massively tougher, I don't think. It's very doable.
Can you smell a screwdrop? I can. Honestly.
I would never.
I thought that was me.
He's the shock master.
He's going to shock the world. Are you ready for your next one, Mark?
Always.
Oh,
it's going to be wrong, but I'm going to go for it.
Go on.
Black Swan.
No.
Oh,
Gemma
shit.
For the steal.
It's The Godfather.
Of course it is. That's a point to Pooch.
Yes. Shit.
Poochy takes the lead. Mark has shit the bed, figuratively, not literally.
Fuck's sake. God, it's
far from over, though, man.
Oh, no.
We're only on round two at the minute, or round three, I should say.
It's far from over, but you've lost.
It's far from over, but it's nearly over.
Come on, I could get this wrong, you know.
Right, shit! Gemma, you ready for number three?
Come on. I thought of Peter Griffin immediately. It's Beverly Hills Cop.
Of course it is. Another 3 points for Pooch.
Yeah, woof.
You can't see right now, but us three were dancing a little bit like on Extras when we're working at the phone shop and all doing it to the ringtone. Amazing.
Oh, it's damn. It's my mum. Oh, she's been ill. Oh, she's hung up.
You're 4 points ahead, aren't you?
Maybe.
Yeah, so Gemma is on 10 at the minute. Mark, you're on 6.
Shit.
All to play for, though.
Yeah,
all to play for.
It's not over.
Pressure.
Not over.
You ready for your next one, Mark?
Yeah. Jesus.
Looking confused.
That's just my normal look. dude, that's tough. It's not even one I don't...
I think you'll kick yourself.
Oh, don't say that.
Yeah.
I was going to revise and listen to every soundtrack of all time. On Spotify. That's Spotify.
Have a punt. You can't lose points.
Sounds quite superhero-y. Fuck, Spider-Man. bad.
Incorrect. Gemma to steal.
This has actually bamboozled me too.
Ooh, bamboozled.
So I'm just going to go for a big old guess. I was, but I'm trying to think of a guess. I don't know. The Goonies. I don't know.
Incorrect. It's RoboCop.
Oh!
Yeah.
I hate myself and want to die.
It's okay. It's
I have fine. To get this and then steal on your next one to win.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
it can
no
be done. It can be done.
It would be good.
It would be.
Okay, Gemma, you ready for your next one?
Okay. I'm going to say Top Gun.
Say that again.
Top Gun.
Correct.
Yay. I think she said it wrong. She said
she
Bop
said
Gun.
Bop Gun. Or
yeah,
something.
Which is
Bop
not right.
I don't. I've never seen the film Bop Gun, so that's an incorrect answer.
Yeah.
No. Oh. Gemma will go. Gemma will hold up if I do that to her.
I will. This table. You see this table? 90 degrees.
Oh,
flip
she's
over.
Won.
That's another 3 points
Sorry.
For Pooch.
Sorry.
Right, okay.
Actually, I could win, couldn't I? I could get mine and then... I would only get a point.
No, you could, mate.
Sorry.
This is the real quiz. They always say it's the Revenge of the Fifth. The fifth question. So this is it. Come on.
Do they always say
always,
that?
Always, everyone.
Who's they and when have they said that?
All the time. You just
I want names.
Names,
You're
examples.
Too busy being God.
Right, I think this last round is the toughest, but you know, you might prove me wrong. Mark, you ready?
Shit.
It is a tough one. You can hear it again if you want. You're going to lose either way.
I'll have a guess.
Go on.
Ant-Man.
No.
Oh, it's something like that.
Gemma.
I think it's in the Marvel Universe. Spider-Man.
It is Spider-Man.
Yay!
Well done, Pooch.
Pew, 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 pew.
Quit. Fuck.
So now this is just to rub salt in the wound, Gemma. Are you ready for your last one?
Hand me the salt.
Here we go. Any thoughts, Gemma?
Oh, God. It's Batman.
It is Batman.
Jesus.
Well, this has been officially an absolute rodding. Mark has scored 6 points. Gemma scored 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, 16, 17 points.
Yay.
Good Lord.
If I had had hers, I'd have won. But, you know, it's the luck of the draw. Should have gone second.
Yeah, you shouldn't have been a prick and insisted on going first.
Do you know why I've done it? Genuinely, I knew all them, piece of piss.
Yeah,
I threw it away, so it makes it really exciting that when you two go head to head, you know, oh, it's not, is
no,
it?
No,
what
no.
What the fuck am I talking about?
It's me and you, dipshit.
I've got nothing to play for. Oh, no, if I win
it could
that.
Be a tie. It could be a three-way tie. Yeah,
that's why I've done it. That's why I've done
and then we'll bring back the tops off wrestle to crown a true champion. However, we do have the tiebreaker that we haven't used, so this, of course, is the real quiz.
Yeah.
So here we go. Are you ready?
The Room.
Boom.
Oh, he's done ya. He's done ya.
A little bit of credibility back.
A little bit.
How good is that?
I'll let you have
music?
That one. Oh, it's beautiful.
It's my ringtone.
That's like, that should be our anthem.
Yeah,
that's it.
It is.
I've enjoyed it. Actually, even though I got thrashed,
so
it's good.
It was a good round.
It was fun. Mm-hmm. You do feel the pressure, though.
The Godfather thing's going to haunt me. That's going to
piss off. RoboCop, man. You should have got RoboCop.
I'm disappointed, not with, you know, everyone else, but just myself.
Yeah, but you have got a chance to pull it back and get some respect back, self-respect.
Come on, you guys.
Next time round, it's me versus you, kid.
The pioneers.
Yeah, not like Johnny come lately over here.
Wow, bring it all back in a few weeks.
What we got here is a little game of show and tell. You don't want to show me nothing, but you tell me everything.
It's time for some good old listener questions, and kicking things off, we have Paul Schofield, who has asked, what are your favourite film scores? 2-0. Ooh, get it?
No, nope.
That's terrible.
I don't get it.
Okay.
That's the worst joke I've ever made.
Worst joke ever!
I'll kick things off. The Thing, I absolutely love. Jaws, unbelievable. I would love to own that on vinyl. And Halloween, John Carpenter. Iconic, incredible, yeah. And they've lasted years and years, and we'll still be listening in years' time.
Yeah, Thing was Ennio Morricone, wasn't it?
Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I've got an Ennio one as well on my list. Again, The Good, the Bad and the Ugly.
Beautiful.
Well, you know, we just had it and you got it wrong.
But, no, I got it right. That's the one I got.
Oh, you did, didn't you? Yeah, you did, yeah. So that's a great one. And the other one I love is Vangelis' score from Blade Runner. That synthy, pure 80s stuff. Love it.
Stunning.
My favourite ever score is by the French band Air for the film The Virgin Suicides. It's so dreamy and so, like, it's just otherworldly. I also like Mika Levy's Under the Skin score because it's just so jarring and so disturbing. But for a good old classic kind of score, Hans Zimmer for Inception, it's just so mighty.
Bong!
Yeah. Bong!
So overpowering.
Damn right.
Again. Lee Johnson has said, is there any soundtrack artwork that you feel might be actually better than the film poster themselves?
I don't know. I'll have to leave this to you guys, because I don't actually buy soundtracks, so I wouldn't know.
Anything that Mondo do is incredible. Mm. So if you have time to go on Google, type in Drive Mondo soundtrack. It is incredible. They really do, with Jaws and all their films, they pick something so good as an image. It doesn't beat the original Jaws post, because that's one of my favourite posts ever, but Drive, I think they nail. So have a look at that one. That's the one.
I love the American Graffiti artwork for the soundtrack. I mean, on the film poster, you have so many icons and imagery that relate to the film and the time of 1962, but on the soundtrack, you have this painting of a waitress in the 60s, sort of holding a tray full of, like, burgers and fries and milkshake, and it's just like a... It's just a classic Americana kind of image of that time. I love it. And it's got a bright orange background, really colourful. It just captures the essence of that beautifully.
Lovely. Check that out on Google Images as
there
soon
we
as
go.
Possible. Mark Grattan, real simple question. Your favourite ever Stephen King adaptation?
Oh, I suppose film-wise, it would be Shawshank Redemption.
Brilliant.
TV-wise, it would be It.
Yes. Wow.
I absolutely adore Carrie.
Yeah.
Carrie's just something else.
For me, it's Green Mile. You actually give us the 3 hours to develop the characters, where every other film that comes out, they never give you the time to do what Stephen King does best, which is create the character. That's why when Dark Tower comes out and it's an hour and a half, it's going to shit the bed and flop.
And that's why the reviews are terrible, because there are, correct me if I'm wrong, Mark, you're a big Stephen King fan, 4,943 books in the Dark Tower series, aren't
there?
Oh my God.
No, so you bought another one.
Oh, so did they? Sorry, 4,000, yeah. So how they've distilled that down to an hour and a half, I'll never know. And well, they haven't, that's why the reviews are shit.
Dog shit. Here's a great question from Darren McChrystal, if I've got your name wrong, sorry. Are there any deleted scenes from films that you think actually shouldn't have actually been deleted at all? That's a proper thinker.
Oh, shit.
I don't know if you guys know this, and you know I love Jaws, but I actually didn't realise there was a good scene that was cut from Quint, who goes into a music shop, and he actually goes to buy some piano wire for his mission to capture the shark. And while he's in there, there's this little short kid playing a clarinet, and he actually loses his shit with this guy, and he's shouting at this young kid because he's getting really angry. And it's a side of Quint we don't see until later on, when we really see him and Hooper going head to head. And it just shows us that bit of anger and that kind of, okay, he's not the nicest guy in the world at all. And any time that you cut from Quint from a film is sacrilege for me. I just think you need to let us see as much of this performance we don't get enough of anyway, so why cut the good stuff? And when I watch this scene on YouTube, it is on there, it's easy to access, you'll realise that would have been a really nice addition to a perfect film.
Yeah, I didn't know that existed. No. I will be on the hunt for
that.
Yes. I bloody love Quint.
It's bloody good.
I think for me it would be Anchorman, the first film. There was so much additional footage that they managed to lump it together into essentially a second film, and it featured a lot of characters that weren't even present in the main film. So, for example, Amy Poehler has a full subplot that is in this set of cut-offs that isn't in the main film. And some of it is shit, and you can understand why they've cut it, but some of it is very funny and should have been kept in.
Gemma?
Nah.
Amazing. There you go.
You're earning your keep, aren't you, Pete?
Exactly.
Nah.
She's done a year now and she thinks she can just walk along and do whatever hell she wants. It's
I'm
not on.
Obnoxious.
Craig Thurlow has said, if you could die in the style of a good movie death, which one would you choose?
Ooh.
Oh, I'd go in a blaze of glory. I'd want to be like Russell from Independence Day.
Oh, Randy Quaid. Yeah, me
save
too.
Save the world. Yeah. Save the world, flying to the motherlode.
Right up the arse of the alien spaceship.
Yeah, kaboom-o.
Yeah, me too.
I would go out in the style in Leon. Just have that grenade in my hand at the end. You die a hero, you save Matilda. It's a great, great way to go out. Incredible. Good question. Steve EILFM has said, which board game would you love to see made into a movie?
Oh, God, I don't know. Scrabble. And Tom Cruise can play the letter K. Why do they keep making films of board games? Why is this a thing? We mentioned battleships earlier. There's a Monopoly one coming out soon. Why?
Everyone keeps saying Tetris is coming out. That's ridiculous.
So stupid.
I wonder if it hasn't come out yet because they've had writer's block.
Tumbleweed.
I'd have Mousetrap. I think that's a great game. I don't know who the fuck I'd cast, but I'd stick in what's the funny Lee guy who was in a film called Mousetrap? Lee Evans. Put him back in just so it's just easy.
As the guy who flips into the bathtub.
That's all
at
you
end.
Need. Everyone else is just blocks and stuff like that. Good game that, but always took ages to build.
I'm amazed you didn't say Warwick Davis as the mouse.
Yes, that too. Gemma?
I go for Pie Face.
Oh.
What the fuck's Pie Face?
You've not seen this game.
Oh,
no.
My God. It's amazing. Like, you have to put your face in, like, this hole.
And good start.
This is true. And you get cream, you get cream on your face.
I know this game, but it was called Gloria when I was a kid.
Honestly, it's got this...
When you're a kid!
It's got this plastic hand that you put squirty cream on, and you twist this dial, and you can just... spaff on your face. It's just mental.
It definitely was called Gloria.
Give someone like Jai Courtney and Dane DeHaan because it might be the most charismatic roles I've ever done.
Yeah, that'd be good. Or get Pam Ranson because she's used to receiving.
Anyway, next question.
Moving swiftly on.
Nerds Chatting have said, what scene from a movie of your life would you love to cut to avoid your parents seeing it?
Oh, see, I'm going to plead the fifth, because if there was a scene that I wouldn't want my parents to see, it's because it's something they don't know happened.
Yes.
So I'm not going to reveal it on a bloody podcast.
And my parents listen, so maybe me losing my V-plates. Virginity.
I was going to go, what, driving? Oh, you drove that all right.
But I've not lost it, so, you know, I'm saving it for Jesus. If my mum's listening, that'll please her.
You're going to score with God.
You're saving your virginity for Jesus. I don't think it will please her, because you're a married man, and that's an odd thing to do.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a random question, but yeah, our parents do listen to this podcast, so that's why we're very mature.
Have you given us an answer, Gemma?
I'm pleading the fifth. I'm doing what you're doing,
good
Ben.
Good call.
At James Asm has said, guys, why is it so hard to actually make a good sports film?
I don't think it's that hard.
Some people are getting it better. We've got Mighty Ducks.
Raging Bull.
Yeah.
The Wrestler.
Moneyball.
Yeah.
Good film.
Basketball.
There you go.
Basketball.
Yeah. That Oscar winning.
Yeah. Still talked about to this day.
Well, you know, so it's not hard. No. They've done it and they demonstrate it all the time.
Yeah, there are good ones, there are bad ones.
Yeah. Bend It Like Beckham.
That's a good film. I've never seen it, but people say it's good.
So you know the guy that changed his name, Josh Barnes?
Yes.
He said if you had to delete a franchise from history to avoid all spin-offs, all original films, all the films that came from it, would you delete either Star Wars or Jaws?
Jaws.
Yeah, Jaws.
Not even, I don't even need to think.
I'd delete Star Wars.
Rude.
That's horrible. That's a horrible decision. That's not nice.
Sophie's choice.
Yeah,
it is. James Botchell has said, what's the last film that you guys watched that sent you to sleep?
Oh, mine was the other night. Only because, in my defence, I'd eaten a heck of a lot of food before going to watch it. So I went to see David Lynch, The Art Life, the documentary.
That looks really good.
It is. It's really great. However, towards the last 15 minutes, I just zonked out. I had too much lamb.
Lamb?
Yeah. So I...
I'm too lambed up here in the cinema.
I was in a lamb coma.
Why did we have so much lamb before we got to the Odeon?
I went to a tapas place. They had a lovely bit of lamb.
Bloody hell. Okay. Mine was Knight of Cups when we watched it in the cinema. I hate it. Absolute boring shit.
And the other day on TV, it was the film John Carter. Have you ever seen that?
Oh, the Disney one.
Oh, yeah. Shouldn't have to.
Was that the biggest loss of history?
It was.
Yeah, it was. It was an absolute shit show. And I started watching it just because it was on, as you do. And then I fell asleep for about an hour and three quarters and woke up and it was still on.
That's the worst that can happen.
For fuck's sake. Rubbish.
David Wadsworth has said, which film character that you were supposed to be sympathetic towards were you actually really pleased when they died? That's a horrible question.
Oh, yeah, I got an answer though. Yeah, have you seen the film Fury?
Oh, yes.
The war film with Brad Pitt. There's a bit in that where Shia LaBeouf's character sticks his head out of the top of a tank and gets sniped. And he's one of the good guys, and you're supposed to be like, oh no, Bible died, no. But I was like, yeah, eat that fucking LaBeouf.
I'm going with that. Anything to see that twat die. Brilliant.
Technically, because he does die eventually, Jim Preston in Passengers.
Yeah.
Rapey Jim. Because he dies of old age, so therefore, hooray! Yep.
That's fair. Ben Feldman has said, your favourite ever film commentary by a director.
Is that Ben who's listened to 30 episodes in 2 weeks?
Yes, hey, he's got his question. It's the Ben Show.
It is.
So it should be.
Yes.
God has spoken.
What's the DVD I've got that's got Radiohead and Fight Club? It's got David Fincher, it's got Brad Pitt, it's got Edward Norton, it's got Radiohead. They're all talking. There's separate
Radiohead
commentaries.
Radiohead.
Yeah, because they've done some of
Do
the soundtrack.
Dust Brothers?
I don't know, but it was someone that was good.
I was going to say.
I think one of them is in Radiohead, though,
yes.
So you're all right.
So yeah, it was amazing. You can literally choose which one you want, and sweet. Honestly, they're amazing. Well, David Fincher talking about how he made a good film like that, amazing.
That's cool. Mm. I really like the DVD commentary to Tropic Thunder. There are two different versions, but one of them has Robert Downey Jr. in character as Osiris.
Oh,
so
God.
In the film Tropic Thunder, you know how he's supposed to be this white Australian who plays an American black guy, and he says that he never drops character until they do the DVD commentary. That's the line in the film. And then he does the commentary
That's
in
amazing.
Character, and he only drops it when the character in the film drops it and goes back to being Kirk Lazarus, at which point Robert Downey Jr. starts doing the Aussie accent of Kirk Lazarus. It's genius.
I need to watch that. My all-time favourite is Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
So you've got Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, you've got Lucy Davis, Dylan Moran, Edgar Wright, everyone is there, and they're just having a bloody good time whilst they're talking about the film. Really great.
Yeah,
and they end up actually talking along with the film, so they're reciting their lines. You just tell they had a really great time when they did it.
We should do that one day.
We should.
That'd be good. John R. Isidore, what's your worst sequel ever made? Wow, that could be a topic one day.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. How have we not done that as a topic? Yeah. That's crazy.
Oh my God, easy peasy, Blair Witch 2, Book of Shadows
Wank.
Is the worst film. Or Staying Alive, the sequel to Saturday Night Fever. It's hilarious.
Any of the Fast films, I'm sick to death. So the seventh one, the eighth one, that annoys me the most.
See, for me, it's more offensive when you get a bad sequel to a good film. So the ones that you've just given there, Gemma, are bad sequels to, in my opinion, bad films anyway. So it pains me when you get things like S. Darko, you know, the sequel to Donnie Darko that had absolutely nothing to do with Richard Kelly. He wasn't involved at all. And also, have you ever seen Be Cool, the sequel to Get Shorty?
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's an absolute stinking pile of cack.
You're the guy that saw it.
The only good thing in it is The Rock, genuinely. Yeah. It's otherwise garbage.
Wank. That should be a topic one day, definitely.
I think so.
Johnny Yeats has put, if you could go behind the set of any movie, old or new, which would you choose?
Mm.
I'd love to go behind the set of The Disaster Artist. Because,
me too.
Yeah, because Tommy has been on set, hasn't he?
Yep.
And I'd love to see his reaction to Franco's portrayal of him. I bet he's not happy.
You know, he'd be like, no, that is wrong. That is bullshit. You did not.
I've heard he likes it. I've heard that he's seen it and he really, really enjoyed it. But you know he didn't. Yeah. He would have sat there going, he's ripping me. Yeah. He's going to get an Oscar for it.
Yeah.
Almost Famous and Jaws. Jaws, you've heard the stories, what it's like just to be there and see it. But Almost Famous would be amazing because they're playing music as the whole scenes are being filmed and it just looks like a good buzz.
Yeah, I'd love to see The Shining.
Oh.
Because Kubrick literally drove old Shelley Duvall into insanity at one point. Yeah.
Amazing. Couple more questions. Cal Lewis Brown has said, who do you think will actually die in the Infinity War films?
That's a big, big question.
Yeah. Let's see, and then we'll put some bunts on it, and then we can listen back.
Well, they've been kind of hinting towards a Captain America death for a couple of films now, you know, especially because he died in the comics. Oh, I don't know. I think it'll probably be someone like Hawkeye.
Yeah.
Because who would give a shit?
Poor Jeremy Renner. Yeah, and the ones that haven't had a movie about them, so Hawkeye or Black Widow.
Oh, Black Widow, that'd
I know,
be
and
huge.
She's so cool, and she shouldn't die because she should have had her own film by now.
Yeah.
Let's go with Iron Man, just to be different and see, you know, that would be... Because if he's not doing anymore, you know...
I could see him dying, but then someone taking over the Iron Man suit.
Yeah.
So the character exists, but Tony doesn't.
Pepper Potts.
It could be. I loved it. I watched Iron Man 2 again the other day for the first time in ages, and I love the bit when she's in the suit.
Yeah.
Bloody brilliant.
Fingers crossed.
Final question from Alice Stops. What's been your favourite part of Skip to the End in 3 years that you've been going, or 1 year for part-timer over here?
Should we let the part-timer go first, and then we'll get to the real answers?
Then we get to the real quiz.
Yes.
Oh, the drunk episode, hands down.
That was good fun.
It was so much fun recording. The bits that you didn't listen to, I think about probably three times in a row, I got a little bit animated with my hands, and I ended up like careering the microphone out of where I sat. Yeah. And poor Mark, and you were sort of, I could see you were like, oh, and then I kept doing it again and again.
You can't edit that stuff
no,
out.
No, you can't. But it was so much fun, and me and Bo were literally screaming down the microphone.
Oh, a couple of banshees. It was absurd.
It was that was horrendous.
Yeah.
It was good fun.
Well done for finishing it off though, Mark.
Yeah, no problem. Just carrying you as always. I think for me and Ben, I don't know if I can speak on behalf of him, but meeting Boise from Only Fools and Horses. I mean, there's some people you dream of meeting, and they never meet your heroes, but he was everything we wanted him to be.
I lobbied for us to do Boise Cast, just a special of us and Boise.
The voice of Boise.
That's right,
but
yeah.
Didn't happen, unfortunately.
The voice of Boise, I'd listen to that.
Yeah. Being at Download was unbelievable. That came from the podcast, but I did absolutely love listening back to High Five. I just think it was mental. I don't know how that came about, and it's just crazy that we did that.
Yeah, I agree with High Five, but it was more fun to be involved in than to listen to. It was great. It was hilarious to listen to. But to be here huffing on helium from like a canister we had to buy from like a party surplus store, it was absurd. And a really cool thing was when we went to the Kong Skull Island premiere. Now, that was a shit film, to be honest.
Yeah.
Getting to walk the red carpet.
Yeah.
Again, going back to when we came up with the idea for this show 3 years ago, I never in a million years thought we'd be walking the red carpet at a movie premiere.
No.
And we did.
And now I expect it all the time.
Yeah, I'm furious if we don't get
I know that we'll be at the Disaster Artist premiere, the Madness and the Method premiere. Whatever comes along, we'll be there.
All the big ones,
yes.
Well, hopefully with the rewatch for Brick on next episode, if you're listening, Mr. Johnson.
Yeah.
Yep. Sort us out.
Mm. Star Wars tickets, please.
And credit where it's due, I saw a tweet this week from some guy saying the best thing that's ever happened to Skip the End is Gemma joining. And to be fair to you, that was pretty nice. I liked it. I didn't comment. I wasn't going to say, you have a little like, but
thank you.
It's all right.
You've done all right, really.
You've done all right. 1 year, man.
No.
And we've not sacked you yet, so that tells you something, doesn't it?
Phew.
Big announcement on the next episode. Stick around. Please keep your questions coming. The best way to get in contact with us is just go on skiptheend.co.uk, the incredible site that was actually hand-designed and produced by God himself. Mm. That's pretty mental, isn't
that's
it, really?
King Ben to us.
He's not just up there, you know, letting people into heaven. He's designing websites.
Big time.
So,
you've got to have a part-time job, haven't you? Yeah.
Exactly. You can't just do that. So go on there. On there's our Instagram, our Facebook, and our Twitter. And loads of good questions are coming through, and we will get to them and just keep them coming. That's all you can do.
That brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. Not a regular episode, but a celebratory episode. 3 years in the bag, or 1 year in the bag for Pooch.
Woo-hoo.
Pretty
it's
good,
been
isn't it?
Pretty damn good. It's been a good 3 years.
It's been a good run.
It's been a good year.
Should we sack it off?
All that stuff for the next episode, scrap
it. Done.
Done. That's the way we all go out, though. I'd like to just quit like that. I wouldn't want to like build it up like, we've got 3 episodes until we end. I just want to just quit one day, and that's it.
The Irish goodbye, they call it. You don't tell anyone you're going, you just go.
Brilliant.
It's probably racist, but that's what they call it. I didn't make it up. We've not finished yet, though. We have our final part of the show that we always have, which is Skip to the Recommend. That's where we come with our favourite pop culture item of the week. It could be another film we've seen. It could be a book. It could be a play. It could be a poem, if you're that way inclined. It could be that you've bought the 12 LP Best of Corey Feldman set, which Mark and I have been spinning for months, and it is pretty good.
It's damn good. I think it's his best stuff since probably Former Child Actor.
Mate. That's says a lot, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it could be.
It's amazing.
It could be. Gemma, what have you got?
I've gone for an animated short film this time around, which you can catch on YouTube. So it's a film called In a Heartbeat.
Mm.
So it's from computer animation students Esteban Bravo and Beth David. And they launched a Kickstarter campaign back in November after teaming up to create a joint thesis together. So their original target was $3,000 for the production. They ended up getting $14,000. Now, the topic of this short film is about a young boy falling in love with another boy. So it's an LGBTQ story, and they wanted to challenge the preconceived notion that the LGBTQ content is not appropriate or suitable for younger audiences. Absolute baloney, because love is love. It doesn't matter if you fall in love with someone of the same gender. The fact that you fall in love with a person speaks volumes, and this feature is just simply beautiful. it just defies this whole preconceived notion that being gay is terrible. It's not. It doesn't matter. As long as you have love in your heart, where's the problem in that? And I'm going to stop to not be too political, because obviously there's been things in the news that sort of challenges this, but it's just the fact that it is simply a gorgeous story about love. It is. There needs to be much more stories like this, not just as short features, but obviously since the success of Moonlight at the Oscars and a few years ago with Blue is the Warmest Colour winning the Palme d'Or. Love has no boundaries, and it should certainly have no boundaries in the world of film or TV or cartoons. More of it, I say. It's absolutely wonderful. It's 4 minutes. It's just a lovely bit of animation.
Damn straight. I bet that's had some serious backlash from the small-minded fuckwits on the internet.
But please go check it out. It simply is captivating. It's beautiful. But yeah, fuck the haters, man. Fuck them.
Yeah.
But it is. It's in the vein of what you normally see in the beginning of Pixar films. So it's really glossy, beautiful bit of art direction too.
Yeah. Wow.
Please go check it out.
It's only 4 minutes.
Exactly. But brilliant. Really fine work from these two students.
You're very passionate then. I like that. Not Hulk passion, just nice.
Nice passion.
A lot of love.
Yeah. Hey, love is all you need.
I don't know how to follow that up, really. Mine's a podcast. Oh. I'm actually, sending our listeners somewhere else. It's called The Swim Podcast by Daniel P. Carter. It is unbelievable. I've been listening to it since it started, but honestly, Ben, one of the most recent guests, this is why I wanted to mention it to you, is Benjamin from Dillinger. He's on
yes.
there, and he talks really good stuff, like all about, you know, ending the tour and everything like that. But some of the guests are, you've got Alan Moore, who did a double episode. You never get Alan Moore to talk about his work.
Yeah. He
you
hates
never
talking.
Get him to talk.
Didn't he have to go to his compound in Northampton to
something
interview
like that.
Him?
Yeah. That must have been amazing. But yeah. He got Maynard from Tool.
Awesome.
Which is crazy. He got Corey Taylor, who, you know, I think would probably give some really good, you know, sights on his insight to being in Slipknot and Stone Sour.
Yeah, we'll
but
forget
he,
that.
Do you know what he launched his podcast with?
Chino.
Chino from the Deftones. Mm-hmm. It is awesome, dude. It's a really decent chat. Tune into his podcast and listen, but make sure you don't stop listening to Skip the End. Honestly, really decent interviews. The last episode that I listened to was the Dillinger one. And, you know, Ben, I know you absolutely love Dillinger's Escape Plan. And you got to see their last UK show at Download.
Yes.
I stupidly went and got some food. It was the end of the night. I missed most of it, and it was rammed.
So you and Scott were tired, yeah. And your feet were hurting. So you decided to sit in a field for a bit while I went to see Dillinger's last ever UK show.
It was rammed as well. Yeah. But you absolutely love that band, and you got me into them. But, yeah. You know, I went on a whim, just like, come and see this band I absolutely fell in love. What a guy Benjamin is. His stories are incredible.
Yeah, Ben Wyman is one of the best guitarists in the world.
Yeah.
His shit is so weird and avant-garde. I love him. I can't wait to see what he does next.
I don't like always plugging other podcasts, but it's good.
Yeah.
Come on then, what have you got?
I'm going with a comic book. It's a comic series that came out about 2 years ago, and it's called Fight Club 2. It's Chuck Palahniuk's follow-up to his novel Fight Club, which of course we know was made into the David Fincher movie. And it's revisiting those characters. So it revisits the resurgence of Tyler Durden, and it revisits the character that was only referred to as the narrator, Edward Norton's character. But in this comic, he's taken the name of Sebastian. And it's 9 years later. Sebastian has married Marla and they've had a kid. He was in prison for a short while and now he's on medication to keep his psychosis at bay, and therefore Tyler is no more. But Marla, being the crazy cow that she is, she wants Tyler back. So she starts swapping out his medication for sugar pills. So Tyler comes back to the surface. Tyler then tries to take over the world. He uses Project Mayhem and all this kind of stuff. And it's mental. It is mental. It's so tonally different from the book and the film. The book and the film is kind of a dark existentialist satire, I suppose. The comic book is just full of comic book wackiness, full of bizarre flights of fancy. So, for example, Chuck Palahniuk ends up in the book. He's in it. He becomes a character in his own story. Some of the characters in it go to visit him to find out what they should do because he's the one who's writing it. And it's really sort of meta and breaking the fourth wall and all that kind of stuff. And it, as I say, some of it is so wacky, so much so that Tyler Durden is revealed as the creator of ISIS.
Oh my God!
Jesus Christ!
Holy hell!
And I honestly can't say that I like it. I don't know that I like it or not, but I recommend it because it's so weird and so out there that if you love Fight Club the book, if you love Fight Club the film, go and get it. I think it's only 10 issues of Fight Club 2. Give it a go and see what you think. It's interesting, even if it's not necessarily good.
Intriguing.
But it's worth a go.
I don't think we're going to get a film from this, are we?
They couldn't make a film. It's batshit. It's nonsense.
It sounds absolutely mad. Like, yeah. I wish, I kind of don't want them to do that with the story. I want a normal story, which is a bit more relatable. The fact that he's put himself in it.
Yeah.
Kind of sounds an unhinged version of being John Malkovich.
Kind of,
He's left it a while as well. How long has it been out? A couple of years ago?
Oh, yeah, so the comic book is 2 years old now, and the film and the book are, what, 15 years?
It must have been 2001 or something, wasn't it?
Well, you know, if you're on Twitter or Facebook, I've seen people go out and buy the books that Ben recommends, or the albums, or the picture. Tweet us the picture or let us know your thoughts, because I love seeing people that jump on board and go and do this stuff. Ben, a couple of episodes ago, when you recommended the Norse mythology book, everyone was going crazy about that. I saw people that bought it straight away, read it, and was just like putting bits of the book up and saying about the characters and stuff, and I think it might have been the number one seller on Amazon that week from your recommendation. So that's the power you have.
Did I see any of the bunts from that? Did I? Bollocks.
What have we got on the next episode?
Oh, so much stuff. But it's not a celebration. It's just a regular old brilliant episode of the Skip to the End podcast. Our main review is going to be Logan Lucky, a new film from Steven Soderbergh, which looks a lot of fun. People are saying it's like a hick version of Ocean's 11, which sounds good.
I'm in.
Yeah, I'm absolutely in.
Is that the one we saw with the trade with Dan Daniel?
Craig.
Yeah. And he's got like bleached hair. It looks mad.
Yeah, it looks a very good bit of fun. So that's going to be our main review. Whose rewatch pick was it?
Mine.
What have we got, Gemma?
We're going to be watching a film called Brick by the future director of The Last Jedi. So this was his breakout film. So it's going to be really interesting to revisit this.
Absolutely. Mark, who are we masturbating over?
Michael Fassbender, so I'll be doing the fingering. If you've seen the new Alien film, that will make sense. If not, you'll just think I'm weird.
And our topic of conversation is the top three awful movies from otherwise great directors.
Oh, I've just thought.
What?
I'm going on holiday to New York in 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm going to Scotland to the Edinburgh Festival as well.
But it's all right, because we put our holiday forms through in advance.
Because we go through HR, which is me.
So we're not going to be able to get the episode out.
Not in 2 weeks, no.
Oh,
what do you reckon?
Shit. 3 weeks?
3 weeks.
Oh.
Okay. So the next episode is going to be out in 3 weeks' time, because we're going on our jollies, frankly. Gemma, are you going to be doing anything?
No, not
That's
yet.
That's a shame, isn't it?
She should do an episode on her own.
Oh, no.
That'd be terrible.
Bloody shambles. I'd be a wreck of a shell.
Yeah, we're going on all day. Yeah. We deserve it. We've worked harder.
Big time harder. What are you going to be doing in New York?
I'm going to be going to SummerSlam.
Amazing.
Which will be really good. I've got tickets to SmackDown, which I've never been to. And I'm just going to just chill and go around Brooklyn and places like that. And just the Comedy Cellar.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. Nice. Definitely.
Yeah, you're going with your dad again, aren't you?
I am, yeah. So that'll be nice.
I must admit, I'm very jealous. I've been to New York the last 2 summers and I'm not going this summer. I am jealous.
There's one good thing about it, Ben.
Yeah.
I will bring you back a decent present.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And you. Because when we go on holidays, remember, we bring something back. So you brought us from Scotland those little
I got you some whiskies.
Glasses. Oh, whiskies.
She did, fucking whiskey.
Yeah, that's nice.
She's getting angry.
Remove the table from me.
So why are you going to Scotland?
Well, because I'm going to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. So I'm going up for a few nights. I've never been. I've always wanted to go. I'm going to see 8 different shows in 3 days.
Jesus
And I'm seeing
Christ.
People like Nina Conti and Frankie Boyle, Richard Herring, Tim Key, also known as Psychic Simon. Psychic Simon.
There you go.
So much good stuff. And I will bring you back some presents as well. It's going to be whiskey.
And you're seeing Colt Cabana.
I am seeing Colt Cabana. So
that's going to be
for those
awesome.
Of you who don't know, Colt Cabana is a wrestler who briefly worked for the WWE, and he now does a show every year at the Fringe where he and a comedian, Brendan Burns, they watch old wrestling matches, shit matches, and just do commentary over the top of it, and it's meant to be great fun. So I'm going to that as well.
So you're upset you're not going to New York, but that's a hell of a week.
Yeah, it should be good. Should be
and
good
you're doing fun. Nothing.
Okay.
Well, I've got Las Vegas in October. But
oh, bragging!
Hang
again.
On.
Do you know what I mean?
You haven't. Joking aside, I'm not going to. I'm going to leave it recording. You've not let us know the dates for that.
I did.
Not officially.
Beginning of the year, Mark. Check your emails.
Did you?
Informally, she did tell me the dates. I've not had the official HR form, though.
Well,
you know what I mean?
On the next episode, in 3 weeks' time, we're going to actually do another analysis of your years, because I'm not happy about this.
Probation review.
Yes. Stay tuned for that. I'm serious. We're going to do it. I'm going to have time on the plane, so I'm going to come up with something new.
Brutal. Oh, let's wrap it up. I'm tired. See you in 3 weeks.